guys, welcome to another episode of Asteroids in Exile. Season 2, episode 4, to be exact. My name is Martin, and with me, as always, is my better half.
Better half, really? Wow, that relationship escalated. Hi, I'm Niv.
I thought I'd raise the intelligence levels.
Oh, really? Yeah, we started off pretty low today, so up. I think it's looking up either way.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah. It just can't get better.
Right. So yeah, there's probably going to be a pre-show tape at some point.
Yeah.
So look out for that.
Yeah. Or a blooper.
All right.
Plenty of
blooper reel. Yeah.
Plenty of pooper material today.
Look, you know, it's like when you're making a movie, right? If you mention a gun in the first act, the gun has to be fired by the third act. So if we're going to mention a blooper reel, now it's incumbent upon us to make sure one surfaces somewhere.
I'll put something together. Something tasteful.
We'll work something out. Maybe it might be an end of year thing. Who knows? Yeah, I don't know. All right. Cool. So what are we talking about today, Martin?
Oh, we have a few trailers, a few mentions. We have reviews. There's a little movie that came out. I think it's called Galaxy in Need of Guarding, Volume 2. Oh. The Lost Mixtape.
Something.
No, it's Guardians of the Galaxy, Volume 2.
The Mixtape. Yeah.
David Hasselhoff's official return.
Wait, spoiler warning.
Silver screens everywhere.
Spoiler warning. Guardians. Alien. We haven't watched Alien, so Alien comes out this weekend. Alien Covenant.
Will you watch it?
I haven't seen it yet. I want to.
Okay,
I want to.
You'll be on your own with that review.
You don't watch Alien?
I won't watch it, no.
You won't, or you don't, or you...
When the opportunity arises that I don't have to pay money for it, but still watch it legally, i.e. if somebody buys the DVD and invites me over, like
and lends it to you.
Prometheus. All right. But I won't spend money on that movie. I'm through.
Can we explore why? You just...
I'm fed up with the xenomorph having to invade a story that would have otherwise been interesting. I think the alien kills the alien movie at this point in time.
That's like saying, you know, I like Superman movies, but that guy who flies really ruins it.
Yeah, but I think Prometheus had a pretty interesting story with the engineers and the whole thing that was left out, that one of the engineers was Jesus and got killed, and that's why they are angry at human beings and stuff. And I think the second Prometheus and the follow-up movie would have been interesting if it wasn't planned out as a prequel to Alien. I think it degrades the story, and it sets up a certain anticipation that has to be fulfilled.
Yeah,
and, you know,
it's what we were saying before. I think Prometheus was beholden to the fact that everyone was waiting for an alien to show up, right?
I guess that Ridley Scott really planned Prometheus as a film separate to the Alien franchise, and then the whole thing didn't come together, and he thought, oh well, just weave it into the Alien franchise. That's only a theory. I don't have anything solid on that. It just feels like Prometheus started out as something else and then became a prequel to Alien.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with you. Prometheus was just completely... I just found it like uneven and stupid.
Yeah.
I found the characters very annoying, some of them. You know, there's the whole, like, if you're going to run away from a thing that's rolling behind you, run not in a straight line.
Yeah, but...
in the same way that it's rolling, you know. There's things like that. This is annoying me about Prometheus. And I can see, you know, in terms of world building, I thought, yeah, maybe it's trying to build out that world. But it's like a part of the world that was like, well, do we really care? And I can understand where you're coming from. I think this movie was kind of like learning from Prometheus's mistakes and saying, well, you know what? If we're going to make an alien movie, make an alien movie.
Like call it Alien.
Because what was cool about it is it's effectively space horror, you know? And so it's a horror movie. It's like you don't need to set up this elaborate thing if you're going to have a horror movie, because the beast itself, the xenomorph, I think is a compelling and awesome
beast
to have to fight against, you know? And it's really at that stage, when you've got that kind of monster and you know that it's lurking in the background, it's all about the suspense and the anticipation of seeing it come out. And I think Prometheus was like all kind of like set up without any payoff, you know? So it kind of like was very, because the story, I mean, why might have been interesting and Michael Fassbender might have been good in the movie. I was like, ugh, why do I care about any of this? You know, if especially because I'm the whole time I'm waiting for the Xenomorphs to show up and they don't.
Yeah, just at the end, and then it's not even a, it's a new morph, I think it's called in canon, the white alien.
Yeah.
Whatever.
I mean, I don't follow the franchise so closely that I know all the intricate details. Because to me, it's just like a horror movie. Like I just you go there to get scared and. To get your jump frights, you know, not so much to be saying, oh no, this is not, this is not canon with everything else.
And explaining, trying to explain the origin of the Xenomorph is something that takes away from the horror aspect because it becomes something tangible. Then you say, it was genetically engineered. And I think to leave the origin in the dark and just say, that's just something that evolved over millions of years out there and became
that just appeared.
This thing. Or just appeared.
A lot of horror or like just things that people are scared of is because you don't know too much about them.
Yeah.
It's mysterious, you know?
You just have to go back a few thousand years in human history. Every time lightning stroke, they rode out and killed a bunch of virgins because they thought God was angry. Sacrificed a bunch of virgins because they thought God was, or a God was angry with them.
Or the sky was angry with them. If you don't know, you know, that part of the mystery, that part of that ignorance is a part of what makes things scary. And I think going in and like, you know, I don't think Prometheus took away too much from that because it was still kind of interesting. But at the same time, once you start reducing things into their scientific origins, you also start saying, well, if, you know, if that's where they came from and if that's how they work, how can you not find a way to kill them or find a way to protect against them?
Yeah, somebody must have built in a somebody missed patch day with the aliens.
it's effectively that point in Predator, right? When Arnold Schwarzenegger is like, if it bleeds, I don't know if Arnold Schwarzenegger said this, but if it bleeds, we can kill it. You know? So when you know its scientific origin, when you've worked out the weaknesses in its armor, you can find a way to take it down. Whereas if you think about like all the crazy bad guys that we like, they're really at their best when you don't know too much about them.
Yeah.
They're just these mysterious figures or these things that kind of seem like otherworldly, like demonic. That's why demons are so cool, is because like they don't actually come from the physical world. And so you don't know, like you need to invoke a demon or a divine response to get rid of them, you know?
It's so interesting because I had a talk about that two days ago, this week, making over-explaining a villain or giving him some tragic backstory takes away from the illness or the respect, the fear you have towards those figures.
Yeah, because I mean, effectively, when you create your you know intricate backstory and explain why the villain the way he is or she is, you're effectively creating an anti-hero at that point. You know, because when you can start empathizing with the villain. They're technically no longer a villain. They may do evil things, but it's coming from a place of now of understanding.
Yeah.
So you can understand why they are the way they are. Whereas if you're going to have just a black and white bad guy, you don't want to know too much about who and why he is. It's just that, you know, this bad evil presence exists and you've got to deal with it. Which is effectively, you know, we were just talking before about Darth Vader in episodes 4 and 5. And 6 as well, I guess. Because once you know Anakin's story, you're like, it's just an emo, misunderstood guy, you know?
Yeah.
He did it all for love, you know?
Yeah, if someone had talked with him or the Jedi were a bit more empathetic.
If the Jedi just follow their own advice, well, I guess their advice is to be detached. So they didn't even, they wouldn't have sat him down and had a nice heart to heart.
We hope, anyway, so hot space Coco.
Hot space Coco. Yeah.
But even if you explain the origins of the alien, I'll probably shit my pants every time.
That's what I'm going for.
Because
yeah.
of the imagery and especially the conceiving an alien part, you know.
Well, that H.R. Geiger design is still just really cool. Like it's viscerally frightening, you know. I think it really goes back to all of the grotesque things that, you know, when we were cavemen, when living by the light of a fire, afraid of the dark, you know. Yeah. It's kind of, it goes back to that ancient fear.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's what I like about the aliens. That's why, to me, like the engineers and all that other stuff, and just didn't make sense. Like, I love that it had this organic look about it, that it had that teeth. Like, it's completely, you know, it's the kind of creature that could almost not evolve. Like, it's kind of designed to be scary to humans, you know? And so yeah. I think it epitomizes a lot of that. It goes back to that really innate fear that we have from, like, you know, 10,000 years ago or more.
It's that thing that we see in the shadows. Like you mentioned, when you are in a cave and you have a fire on it, the flicker of the fire projects.
Oh yeah, can you imagine? That would be so cool. See, that's the image I want. Is like, because not only are you like, you know, you're in a cave with this, your campfire, which is all like warm orange yellow light, and then just in the shadow as the light's flickering, you see kind of just the teeth with like the saliva dripping down.
And it's, oh my god, that's so cool. I'm gonna sleep great tonight. Thank you very much.
That's effective. I mean, look, I mean, because it's effectively a growling wolf in the shadow, yeah. you yeah. know, because it's just the teeth, like there's nothing covering it. Oh, that's such a cool image. I love it. This is why I'm compelled to go watch it. But I can understand why you're like, I don't want to promote this, because at the end of the day, it's also like, how many more of these can we take, and how, you know, what new are they going to bring to the table? And so that's the thing. I think Alien Covenant, it's got this interesting thing with like the colonists going out in pairs, but at the end of the day, they kind of like, they forget, from what I've heard with the reviews that have come through, they don't really spend a lot of time with the human characters, because effectively they're all cannon fodder anyway, so you don't have to get to know them very well, and they don't really, you know, maybe amount to anything at the end of the day. So it's more about the scares, and so I'm interested to go on that ride. I haven't had a good scare from a movie from a while, so.
Oh, from a movie, okay.
I know, I qualify that one. I'm not going to invite any other non-movie scares. I like living a boring life.
I can totally relate to that.
I'm fine to pay like $14 or whatever it is to go get scared. I don't want it to randomly appear.
You have Sir Ridley Scott scare me.
Yeah.
He's sitting behind you. Boo! Sir Ridley Scott, oh.
I just read a report on Variety this morning. Actually, I didn't read a report. I read a headline that the Alien Covenant box office is already looking to eclipse Guardians. So
really?
Guardians opened 2 weeks ago. I don't think there was anything last week. I think King Arthur opened last week.
King Arthur,
week, so
yeah,
that
but
was
that
like,
one bombed from what I heard.
Completely. Yeah. I mean, from a movie point of view, that did really badly. I think they spent $175 million or something to make that, and they made, I don't know, like less, you know, around 20 on his opening weekend, which is not very good. I don't know the exact numbers, but yeah, so like 2 weeks in, and Alien Covenant, I mean, yeah, it's going to take the top spot, so it's doing pretty well. I think, I don't know how it's doing against projections, but
Arthur had in the 8 day total 22 millions and
oh, there you go,
301,000, and Alien is heading toward a $40+ million opening. Man, The Friday estimates are 15 millions for Alien Covenant.
So 40, 44, 45? I think, that's decent.
Man, that's...
Because Wonder Woman's projected to open, I think the last projection I saw was 65, which is decent.
Yeah, it's...
But it's pretty low for a superhero movie. I personally think it needs to try to break 100.
Yeah. Covenant made worldwide 62 million at the moment, according to boxofficemojo.com.
Right.
And Guardians made $695 million worldwide.
That's cool.
$695 million.
Well, that's, I mean, that's still, you know, the aim needs to get into the $1 billion club. So it's only halfway there. So I think it'll be, because that's the thing. It's like the movie theater season, the blockbuster season's just starting now. Guardians kicked it off. So it's only halfway towards $1 billion. I don't know whether it'll actually be able to crack it. But.
No, perhaps with DVD sales and
yeah,
merchandising stuff.
I don't think Guardians is like strong enough, because that's like the, I don't know, like what's so supposed to be the big $1 billion movies this year?
The $1 billion, well, Star Wars, of course.
Because like DC doesn't have anything, I mean, aside from Wonder Woman, but Justice that's only League. Projected to be 65. Is that this year?
I think Justice League comes out this year.
Really? Okay. Yeah, maybe towards the end of this year. Justice League, I mean, DC is just all over the place, but they need a win. I mean, they need a win. The way they get a win is by actually having a good movie with interesting and compelling stories
because
and characters.
They managed to make the comics good again with
is
the
that
Rebirth thing. I read a lot of more DC stuff now. November 17.
Okay.
Is the Justice League opening, and if they can, well, rejuvenate, if they can put some of that restorative energy into their movie franchises,
yeah,
that would be great. I want to see a DC movie that I enjoy as much as the Marvel movies.
Yeah,
I truly do. I miss having fun with DC,
with the DC characters. I mean, yeah. The animated movies is where we're getting most of that fun right now.
Yeah.
I don't know. We haven't really spent a lot of time here talking about the DC animated movies, I don't think.
Yeah, and I stopped after watching the Arkham Asylum movie.
Oh, the one with...
It was effectively a Suicide Squad one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm all for violence and I'm all for violence. I'm all for animated violence and
yeah,
a darker tone. But I think the animated movies take themselves a bit too seriously these days.
Well, yeah, I know what you mean. Because they're not lighthearted fun romps. They're pretty violent.
Yeah.
They're pretty extreme sometimes.
And it fits with the Arkham Asylum movie. Fits in there, but then the what was the last thing? The Alan Moore story?
The Killing Joke.
The Killing Joke, thank you.
Yeah, I didn't watch that one, a little bit out of protest, also because I'd rather just reread The Killing Joke.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I mean, what they're doing with the rest of the movies, I don't know. I kind of like the fact, you know how you said they're taking it too seriously. I like that they're actually taking it seriously, because the cinematic universe is so uneven and so all over the place. I'm not getting that same level of satisfaction from the DCEU as I am from the animated movies. The characters in the animated movies actually have story arcs. You know, they might not be great story arcs, but at least you can get the sense of character and you can get the sense of story, and it's compelling to watch. Whereas the cinematic movies, they look good and there's specific scenes that you would just want to freeze frame and like put up on a poster. But you're like, why am I spending 2 hours watching this? Just show me all the good scenes, like the, you know, in a 2.5 minute trailer, and I can save that time. Because, like, you watch the whole of Batman v Superman, and it's like, okay, this is really not going anywhere. I mean, it's nice to look at, but you might as well put it on a loop in the background while you do other things, you know? Because nothing happens anyway.
And that's sad. But Wonder Woman might change all of that, hopefully.
Yeah. What's your expectations for Wonder Woman?
I hope it's a, as you said, it's a decent movie with a halfway decent storyline and characters that feel like they are really or actors and scripts channeling what those characters are about, mm-hmm. and not just take bits and pieces and amplify them to make those characters caricatures of themselves.
Yeah. So you want like respect for the audience and respect for the material.
Yeah, yeah.
Sounds like what you're saying.
Like what Marvel is doing. They are changing characters. And
it's in service of story.
I
think
they're not breaking the characters. It's adaptations. And with DC, I think they take just one bit of the character and just crank it up to 11. and ignoring all the rest and say Suicide Squad.
Well, and yeah, that's pretty much like Zack Snyder's vision as well. Yeah. You know, it's like, you know, it's there's some interesting concepts, but they don't really do anything with them. They just kind of like, hey, did you ever think about this? But they don't really play it out. They just kind of say, what about like Superman as Jesus? Cool, huh? And then you just have that shot of Superman kind of like floating there while a lady reaches out her hand. But he's like, just do something now, you know, make something happen, Clark. Because I was reading something else somewhere. Somebody said that Superman just looks so unhappy saving people.
Yeah.
Like, why does he do it, you know?
He should just stop then.
Yeah. Just go. It's like he can live anywhere at this point, you know. Rule a small island if it's going to make you happy. Just do something, you know, and not look so mopey all the time. You know? I don't know. Emo Superman. And me as well. I'm excited for Wonder Woman. I've already got my tickets, so I bought my pre-release tickets or whatever they call it. Ready to go. I hope it's a good movie. I hope it's going to be fun and enjoyable and have a good story and be like exciting and show us things that we haven't seen coming from the DC universe before. And I think Wonder Woman's a cool character. I think the way they've sort of put it together with like all of the mythological aspects, as well as setting it in World War One, I think there's still a lot of, hopefully there's still a lot of surprises because they've showed us the same things over and over again in the trailers.
Yeah.
Nothing really new or mind blowing has come out recently depends why. If it's because they don't actually have any more than that for the movie, then that's going to be disappointing. Because I want more than what they've shown us. What they've shown us is great, but, you know, if I've already seen it, why am I going to the movie?
Yeah.
So I hope that there's more surprises in store. And they haven't shown us the big bad yet. They haven't showed us Ares, who's behind all of this stuff that's happening in the movie. So I'm hoping that there's stuff that there's still to come that they've kept as a surprise.
A surprise, yeah. But then, isn't it, you know, to get pumped for a movie... I don't think I finished that thought, but you know, I stopped.
You mean like expectation, having too high expectations?
Yeah, I stopped watching the trailers for Wonder Woman.
Yeah, me too.
I think because that movie is such a marker for the future of the DC universe. I think, or I feel that way.
It's a milestone. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Wonder Woman could be the point where the whole thing turns around. Well, not the whole thing turns around, but at least where we see, they got something right.
Yeah.
And that's why with the Marvel thing, I know the Marvel machine is running. I don't have to be afraid that a Marvel movie.
there's no anxiety. You don't have to take Prozac before you go into the movie.
It won't fall below a certain level.
Yeah.
Not anytime soon. But with DC, there's still so much potential to be.
Yeah. It could still go either way. Like, we're still waiting for the great movie,
yeah.
The great DC movie, because statistically, we need to get one, right?
Yeah.
But we don't know. You know, it's the probability is quite low.
Yeah, and Wonder Woman has to build some boss for Justice League.
And I don't know if it's doing that, like, because, yeah, Justice League is, like, almost coming out of nowhere. It's almost too soon. We don't care about those characters. And, you know, the mainstream, the people who will need to be the audience and who will need to care, don't know who Cyborg is or why they need to watch him in a movie. And the same for, like, The Flash. Obviously, people know The Flash from the TV show, but, like, how is this Flash different? Who is even this Flash? We don't even know.
And that's the biggest problem with having a Flash TV show and then having The Flash in the movies. I think it bugs me personally.
Yeah. Warner Brothers is just not very well, like the DC universe are just not very well thought out. There's too much conflicting and detracting material out there. I mean, and the animated movies as well. The animated movies might do well to sort of set up and break the ice and test out ideas. But then you've also got the TV shows, you've got the animated series and stuff. And everyone's like, why do I need to go pay to watch this?
Yeah. And now... I'll save that for later when we talk about the trailer to DC's newest TV series.
All right, cool. So let's put a pin in Wonder Woman then.
Yeah.
So obviously
from Prometheus to Wonder Woman.
Did we finish with Alien Covenant? I still want to see, but you you're like, so I'm going to see that. I'm going to see Wonder Woman when that comes out.
Yeah.
So we'll just have to see how it turns out, I guess. So let's flip now to trailers. What else have we got? So the new DC trailer you were talking about, which one's that?
Black Lightning is getting a TV series. And it obviously, well, judging from the trailer, goes the road of Black Lightning being a retired hero and coming back into action. And I've read that the series will be set in a separate universe than the rest of the DC series that CW is airing. And I think that's
really, this is a Greg Berlanti thing as well, right? So this is the guy who's doing The Flash and Arrow and also producing Supergirl and Legends of Tomorrow and stuff.
Yeah. And it's not,
he's got like multiple projects on the line.
It's not set in the Arrowverse. I mean, it doesn't mean that The Flash can travel to Black Lightning's dimension, because I think Black Lightning would be from what I saw in the trailer a great complementary character to Arrow.
Yeah, I agree. I'm actually disappointed that they're not all set in the same universe, because I think, I mean, not that they need to interact all the time, but, you know, if you're going to build a world where superheroes exist and you've got those sorts of things happening, why not have him in the same universe?
Yeah.
You know, I think because he's going to be in a different city anyway. I don't understand. To me, this looks so, I really don't like the aesthetic of this show. I don't like the aesthetic of, and by that I mean the costume looks stupid.
Yeah.
If you watch the trailer, he's Black Lightning, but he's got like this over, like the costume just looks ungainly on him. Like it's so big. It looks like he's wearing like plastic armor. And then even worse, the armor lights up.
Yeah.
With white lightning bolts or blue lightning bolts.
Yellow lightning bolts and blue outlines. It's a classic costume, but as an armor. The guy is already pretty beefy, and then he has this armor.
I know. it's like, you know, if you actually had to put the Iron Man suit on Robert Downey Jr., he would look too big. Like it would look out of proportion.
Yeah.
So every time you see Iron Man on stage or on screen, it's effectively CGI, because they're not actually giving Robert Downey Jr. the armor to wear, pretty much. This looks like, it's like he's wearing NFL-sized armor, you know?
Like, he looks like he can't fit through a door frame anymore. He has to enter a room sideways.
I don't know how you're doing, like, fight scenes with the mobility that armor is giving you.
CGI.
It just looks... So it's power, to me, it's like Power Rangers level, you know? So it's super low budget. It looks B-movie. It looks B-grade, which is weird, because the reason why Black Lightning comes out of retirement and has to, you know, take back the mantle of being Black Lightning is because there's violence in the streets. The police are not able to help or do anything about it. And so he has to come back in order to do that. And that's like ripped from the headlines kind of situation.
Yeah.
At the moment in America, right? So that is compelling, and that's almost too real for the type of aesthetic that they've gone with, where they've really got this B-grade kind of look and feel about the whole thing. So it's kind of like, it's uneven to me, and I saw it, and I was like,
yeah. Yeah, if the conflict and the references to real-life events is put in a good way, you can look over the B-movie aspect of the proceeding. But if the story doesn't work, if the characters don't work, and the fact that they are not putting it into the Arrowverse, I think they call it, doesn't give me high hopes that the producers are, or the producers, the guys behind it, are having high hopes for it. It feels like they are just, you know, dipping their toe in the water.
Let's see how this does.
Yeah.
Yeah. It feels like something almost, I don't know. It feels uneven, first of all, because I think the tone is all over the place. There's a lot of stuff about family. There's a lot of stuff about like the gang violence. But then I'm going to go out looking like it's a really bad Halloween costume.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't know. I think, we're obviously just going to have to see how it lands, but it's not going to be something I'm going to be compelled to watch
Yeah, I'll watch at least the first episode. I'll give them that. Perhaps there's something in there that we haven't seen yet.
Maybe.
Who knows?
Maybe. I've got really high expectations when it comes to like how these things look, you know? And if it looks crap, I tune out. And I know, because I don't watch a lot of the Japanese shows like Kamen Rider and stuff like that. So that aesthetic, and that's the part of the reason why I don't watch it, because I don't like that aesthetic, like with those kind of really B-level costume design and stuff like that. So I'm just not used to it. So anyway, let's see how it goes. But I just saw that and I'm like, really?
Yeah, it looks...
This is what our person of color superhero ends up being?
Yeah, he looks off. He looks off. If they just have given him the costume he wears in the flashbacks that we have in the trailer,
which was like a leather costume, right? Was it leather from what I remember?
As well, just give him a new leather jacket and that's it.
Yeah, I don't know what they were thinking, because like even in like Legends of Tomorrow, and I think Arrow as well, the Atom.
Yeah,
his costume. It was like borderline bad to me.
Yeah,
like it kind of like from a design point of view, it was interesting, the way they put it together. But it just looked like I would not want to be seen in public wearing that. Like, no. And I think that's the test of a cool costume, right?
Yeah,
is if you're a kid, are you gonna want to go out on Halloween dressed up as this? You know, like all your other friends are gonna have these cool costumes. Do I want to be the one with this super bulky, shiny plastic armor with like yellow and blue lightning bolts coming down? When I'm supposed to be black lightning, not yellow and blue lightning, you know, I can just
they should have adapted
not only that. Why does he have to be black lightning if he's got no literal black lightning coming out of anywhere? Why, you know, why isn't he just lightning? You know, I don't know. It feels a bit exploitative. I mean, why do we have to put black in everything? You know.
Yeah, but you know, that's.
It's a bit on the nose.
It's a bit on the nose, yeah. But it's the character.
Yeah,
I know,
I mean,
he's
fair
not the
enough.
Most beloved comic book character, but
yeah. I mean, so that's the thing. It's like you know.
Yeah, it's 2017.
It's not like there's
going to
be legions
and
legions of fans that you're going to piss off by changing him to just Lightning. All right, that's Black Lightning. To be seen.
Okay.
All right. So. On the theme of TV shows, then. So, have you seen the trailer for Gifted?
Yes.
What do you think of that?
You know, it's on Black Lightning levels for me.
Really?
Yeah. Because
interesting. I liked it a little bit more than the Black Lightning trailer. Yeah. So Gifted is it's going to be on Fox. It's a it's an X-Men franchise spin-off. So it's about a family who discover that their kids have powers effectively and have to go on the run. Right, I think that's the high level summary. But you didn't like the concept, or you didn't like the way they pulled it together?
I don't like the concept, because that sounds stupid, because with Riverdale and all of that, and to a certain extent 13 Reasons Why, I'm just so tired of watching high schoolers being bullied and discovering they're mutants and blah 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 blah. It just feels so, I don't know. Give me Xavier's Institute or the Morlocks or something like that.
Yeah. Do you think it's just us potentially being out of touch with
yes, definitely, with definitely
the youth zeitgeist.
I had a talk.
Am I pronouncing that right? Actually.
Yeah.
Okay.
I had a talk with my niece a few hours ago.
Uh-huh.
And I'm so out of touch.
Okay, I'm not saying we're old, right?
No, but and most of the stuff that's cool these days, I just can't stand. It's just
I know what you mean. I don't think we didn't talk about 13 Reasons Why, but it was a harrowing journey to get through. And I know it was super popular, like with the kids.
Yep.
But I was like, why, you know, why does this need to be 13 hours? Like. The whole thing was like, just, it was like pushing water uphill to watch it to me.
Especially if I got the tapes, I would have just told my mom I was sick, and then burned through the tapes in a day.
I know. Yeah. I mean, I think most people would do that, but The only reason that the main guy in the show didn't do it is because it was a plot device to make 13 episodes, you know? So he went through every tape painfully slow, yeah. You know, rather than just listening to them all. And everyone in the show tells him, like, all the other characters, like, you're still listening? You're like, you're still on tape 5? Like, dude, I listened to it in like 2 hours, you know? Anyway.
I don't want to shit on the show. It's important to address all those issues.
Did you watch the whole thing? Right.
And I'm
because it's pretty graphic. Like, they show you everything. It's the most depressing. It's one of the most depressing things I've seen this year. And not depressing in a good way. Not depressing in the way where you're like, I really didn't have, like, a lot of empathy for the characters in the end because I was just so sick of how horrible they all were. And so I think it kind of didn't work for me on that front just because when you tell a story like that, you want to have empathy and understanding for the characters. Yep. Whereas I think the main character who made the tapes just came across as really, really unlikable. And so I was like, that didn't really work in terms of what they were attending.
Yeah, but then that's another issue I had to discuss this week with, if we want our narratives to be more natural, we have to admit that sometimes all people involved in a certain event aren't the nicest people. There was a discussion we had like yesterday or 2 days ago where I complained about, I don't know, some TV show. And then we ended up agreeing upon that, you know, life is messy. And especially with portraying that situation and the chain of events that led to the suicide.
Yeah.
Not everybody involved in our stories is a hero, and not every protagonist is actually a protagonist, but rather can be an antagonist. But it's still,
sure, you know, sure.
Life's messy.
Yeah,
but
I agree.
It doesn't make for great TV.
And that's why, because life is so messy, when we create these stories and when we create this entertainment, it needs... It shouldn't, I mean, it technically, you know, it's like that Seinfeld joke. If I wanted a long, boring story with no point, I have my life, you know, I don't need to watch, I don't need to watch something because I still don't understand what the point of 13 Reasons Why is. If it was to raise awareness, then that should have been a PSA. That should have been a public service announcement ad on TV that takes like, you know, 90 seconds. If it was about bullying, then again, you know, like a lot of the things in the show could have been an advertising campaign rather than this movie or this TV series. Because what ends up happening when you see how it all came together, it doesn't give you any hope at the end. And even the hero of the character, like the girl who commits suicide, I can't remember her name now, should have come across as an empathetic figure, but she just comes across as just super self-centered and just annoying, you know, to me. Like, sure, bad things were done to her, but I think the whole point is, you know, why did she do any of this? Was effectively, she was, you know, in creating those tapes and in putting everyone through what she put them through at the end, is she's propagating the thing that made her commit suicide.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like she's effectively, you know, amplifying and propagating the effect of her suicide and the reasons why, and ruining a whole bunch of other lives. And that almost glorifies the fact that she committed suicide, because it's not taking away, it's not showing the selfishness of it. And it's, you know, I mean, it is to a point, but it's just, you know, it's that negative feeling that sort of, that whole situation doesn't get any resolution. It just kind of spirals into more negativity. And so there's going to be a season 2, which they've kept a whole lot of things. Cause like, you know, there's a guy in the series who's got like a whole bunch of, he's got a cache of weapons, and you're like, well, I wonder what that's building towards, you know, cause you know, we all know, but it's just going to show, like, it's so depressing and emo, but it's also propagating the fact that being a teenager is depressing and emo, whereas that's not the full story. It's like none of the people in the show had any fun. You know, there was no one there. There was no one in the whole show. And sure, it revolved around you know, the death of this girl and stuff. But there was no one there that was actually having any fun. And I think that was disingenuous. You know, if you're going to show reality, if you're going to show how messy life is,
you have to show every
aspect. It's messy in the other way too.
Yeah.
You know, there's going to be good moments as well as bad moments. And yeah. I think the biggest sin of the show is that it was such a downward spiral of negativity that it had no redeeming qualities about it in terms of like the story, you know.
Yeah.
You walk away from it thinking, this is not somewhere I want to go back to. And unless you're like, again, if you're a kid growing up now and it's kind of like you feel it's really resonant, it's not making you feel any better. I mean, maybe the only thing it's giving you is validation that, yes, life sucks and the world is a vampire, to quote, who was that? The Smashing Pumpkins? But yeah, it's not giving you any sort of hope for the future. And like, what is this generation of kids who are growing up and this gonna take away from it, you know? I don't know. Yeah, anyway, that's your reasons why. That was my rant. We weren't planning on actually talking about this.
No, yet. No.
But I was like,
we stopped at the Gifted.
This show. I liked the cast were good. Some of the actors and stuff. Dylan Minnette, who's the main guy. I think the last time I saw him was on the TV show Awake, which I really love the premise for. It only survived one season on NBC, which is why I don't really tend to gravitate towards network shows that go on Fox and NBC and CBS because they get cut like randomly. Did you ever watch Awake? I think it's on Netflix now.
I think I saw one or two episodes, but just as background noise.
Right. Okay. I love the premise of it. So the premise was that there's a family, like a mother, a father, and a kid in a car crash, and the mother dies. And the son survives, so it's just the father and the son. But when the father goes to sleep, he wakes up where the son died and the mother's alive and survived the car crash. So he's in between these two worlds. In one world, his son survives and his wife dies. And in the other world, his wife survived, but the son died. But he remembers both sides. So he has this relationship with both of them, but they both think that the other one's dead. And the two worlds coexist in his head. And it was really fascinating. Like, I would have loved to have seen how that progressed because the whole show was done. He's got a psychologist or a therapist in each world that he's talking to, and they're helping him process what's going on. But it's two different therapists as well. So he's telling them the story, and then we see it being played out as the show continues. It was a great concept. I really liked it.
Yeah, but it already feels too complicated for network TV.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. And that's why whenever, you know, those kinds of high concept style shows end up on network TV, you're like, it's either going to be lost. Because they get cut down or they don't go anywhere or they get relegated to like midnight and then no one watches them and then they disappear silently, you know. Anyway. All right, cool. So let's just finish off with 13 Reasons Why.
Yeah, and The Gifted.
And Awake. And Gifted. All right, so what other TV show trailers have come out?
Defenders? Got a trailer for the Defenders of the Earth. No, of New York.
Oh, I wish.
The Flash gone. It would be amazing, yeah.
I wish. That's what we need. Who owns that franchise? We need to get that up and running again.
Ah, that would be so great. But, you know, the Dynamite tried out to put together a Defenders comic book series, and that was...
Really? Yeah. It's a pretty tough ask. I think very similar to the like bringing together the Justice League, the Defenders of the Earth. It's like Flash Gordon. It's Mandrake the Magician.
It's the Phantom.
Yeah. They're all so wildly left field that you couldn't just put them all in one movie together. Like it's like everyone too much, you know? It's not going to work. Interesting. All right, cool. Anyway, so it's not Defenders of the Earth. It's at the actual Defenders. The Marvel Netflix zenith of its
small screen it's Avengers.
Yeah. So what do you think after seeing the trailer?
It smells like Iron Fist all over again. You know the first scene where Matt Murdock comes in?
Yeah.
Jessica Jones, don't say a word. I am Matt Murdock, your attorney. I'm Cheesy Mac Cheesecake, your attorney at law.
I'm Cheesy McCheesecake. That would have been a better line.
But it's the first thing I thought. I mean, Charlie Cox sells it well.
Yeah.
But, you know, the dialogue, if you just...
The dialogue sounds a bit weird. I mean, they spend a lot of time, like, introducing themselves to each other. Yeah. And there's, like, you know, it's like, you got the man with the fist, and you got the ninja. And like, I mean, they do need to set up, I guess, who these characters are and sort of make sure everyone understands that they're all coming together.
Yeah, and of course, them, this... Oh, I'm sorry. I was just apologizing to my microphone. the fact that they have to... That will be the center of the show, I think. How those four learn to interact with one another. Yeah.
But that should be cool. I mean, how they... I mean, that's what I want. I mean, again, I love stories of teams coming together. You know, that's why I love the Avengers, the first one. It was just so cool. And I think this, you know, if it can capture some of that, and this is the challenge, right? It needs to capture some of the fun aspects of it, as well as having a very serious antagonist, a very serious bad guy that brings them all together. Because, you know, why else? If it's just a mundane, if the bad guy's not compelling, if the force of evil that they're fighting is not compelling, it's just going to be like, well, this was just a waste of time.
Yeah.
So we need that balance of both of those things, which I think was Avengers got really well by bringing the team together. There were jokes, there were internal fights as they kind of got to work out how they worked together. And then Loki was just really cool. Bad guy, because he was, you know, it was really cool because he was a middle bad guy. He was like kind of the Darth Vader before you meet the Emperor, yeah. You know, because you know that there's like a bigger force that he's kind of stuck in the middle as well. But he's also like ruthless and just psychotic. So he was a great bad guy to have. I don't know how they're going to bring that together in the Defenders, because they've all got their own bad guys. You got the Punisher roaming around somewhere. I don't know if he's going to get involved. Elektra was put into that sarcophagus. Yeah, at some point
she will play a part if you believe the trailer, or they just played the segment from Daredevil season 2 in reverse.
I think from what I understand, I think the Defenders is being put together by the Daredevil season 2 team, so pretty sure they've got the reins, so hopefully it's not as bad as Iron Fist in terms of its unevenness.
I blame Nirvana on the whole thing, because I never liked that band. So choosing Come As You Are as the soundtrack already put me off. But I don't know. Perhaps, as you've said, if we see the team building exercise in the 13th episode form, it'll feel much more natural and more fun than in the minute and a half or 2 minutes that the trailer is long.
Yeah, and I think hopefully it's natural, because the thing is, these characters now exist in the shows that they've created. And if you look at like Luke Cage at the Jessica Jones show, he was different to Luke Cage in his own show, you know?
Yeah.
He was a lot more relaxed in Jessica Jones, whereas by the time we see him in Luke Cage, he's like so high strung and intense. You're like, is that the same guy? Like, is that the same character? What I don't like that they try to do in these comic book adaptation sometimes is when they force the characters into their relationship dynamics that are from the actual comic book itself, but without setting that up properly. A good example of that is Wolverine and Cyclops in the X-Men movies. Like, there was in the comics, Wolverine and Cyclops have this long history and this animosity and this rivalry with each other.
Yeah.
Whereas they just kind of plonked it into the movie, and it kind of like, it's like, why are they fighting? Like, wait, why don't they like each other? You know? And I think I don't want that to happen in The Defenders, just because Luke Cage and Iron Fist had a really good kind of like, because they had a very cool relationship in terms of like just jokes and kind of infighting with each other. They need to make that authentic to the characters that they've now got and not just have it because it was in the comics, you know? And so already in the trailers, like we've seen Luke Fist. Already in the trailers, we've seen Luke Cage say to Iron Fist, like, wait, what's an Iron Fist? Like, hopefully that's, you know, it's not just there for like tokenism, because that's what it should have been in the comics, but they actually develop that as a part of the story and a part of the characters. Like, how would Luke Cage, as we know him, and intense as be, you know, having gone through everything he's been through, react to this hippie Eastern philosophy martial arts guy with the light up fist. You
I,
know?
Think, I think this Luke Cage on a character level would have a great chemistry with Iron Fist, because he's a very well read character, as was developed in the Luke Cage show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's Iron Fist comes clearly from a background where he learned a lot about philosophy, but he hasn't internalized it.
He's got no real world experience.
Yeah, yeah. But why, and Luke has internalized that, and they could work greatly together because yeah. of Iron Fist's white-eyedness or lack of reality experience, while Luke Cage got the full package.
Yeah, like Luke Cage, you know, he's from the streets,
yeah.
you know, whereas Iron Fist is from a monastery. So that's a cool, yeah, that's a cool dynamic.
If they
so.
Can get that to work in the series, that would be great, but they can't do that in a there should be a Luke Cage, like a Heroes for Hire series, a separate one where they develop that relationship.
But, I think they could do it in terms of 13 episodes, having just sat through 13 Reasons Why again.
Yeah.
Is a lot of space. There's a lot of time. Like I was watching those episodes in 13 Reasons Why, saying, this feels like it's been going on for like 3 hours now. It's like it's only been 45 minutes into the episode, you know. Like, so I think they've got enough space with 13 episodes if they break it up. Like they could spend 4 episodes with just 2 characters at a time. So it's, you know, they could spend 4 whole episodes with Luke Cage and Iron Fist just having like a buddy team up kind of situation, while Jessica Jones and Matt Murdock are sorting out the legal side of things, you know.
Yeah.
And then they could flip. Then you could have Matt Murdock and Luke Cage have a thing,
yeah,
with another 2 or 3 episodes, while Jessica Jones and Iron Fist have this solo mission, whatever that is, right? And then you bring everyone back together. So you've got like enough time, I think, to develop one-on-one relationships as well as bring everyone together as a team.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be fascinating. And that's what I like about those team coming together stories.
I hope that we someday get beyond the 13 episode or whatever expectations or plans, and just give stories the space they need.
I hear what you're saying. I think you need to have a constraining limit, though. Otherwise, you end
up with...
Of course,
of course. Not like Defenders, the 200 episode series.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, because that's the thing. It's like the constraint is that the story, and so I think it needs to be proportional to the characters and the story you're trying to tell, right? Because doing the Defenders as a 2-hour movie, yeah, for sure, too short. Like potentially, I mean, maybe you could get away with it because you've already introduced all the individual characters, but a lot of times, like with Game of Thrones, you need space.
Yeah,
and it could, you know, you need enough space to sort of give the story and the characters room to breathe and grow and actually show who the characters are. Otherwise, you end up having, like, that's why the X-Men, the first movie was just like, so it felt so contracted, because I think it was, I don't know, I think it was only like 90 minutes or something. And they fit, like, you know, there were so many characters that nobody had time to breathe, and everyone came across as really superficial and kind of, you don't get a sense of who the characters are. Cardboard cutouts.
Yeah. But then also,
but I think, yeah.
Now also have the ability to say, okay, we don't need 45 minutes or 50 minutes to tell this story. We only need 20 minutes, and give the storytellers that space and say, okay, we have like 20 episodes, but in those 20 episodes are 5 or 6 20 minutes episodes or 30 minute episodes. Because you don't need to develop the characters any further. You just have to you just have to bring the plot along for those episodes.
Yeah. I mean the key point is it needs to be in service of the story.
Sorry,
right?
Yeah.
Like that's
yeah.
that's the main thing. The story needs to make sense and have enough, and needs to be driven by its characters.
Yeah. The language should be more fluid. We should invent more words for the language of storytelling. Yeah.
I'm sure there's enough words. I'm sure we just don't know them. Maybe that's what yeah. I know. Pacing. I'm sure, you know, it's about
yeah.
pacing. Pacing
yeah.
needs to come in there. I mean, yeah, I need to go back to all my storytelling books. I haven't finished Robert McKee's story, though. I mentioned that in a previous one.
Yeah.
I just finished my current reading. Sapiens by Yuval Noah Harari.
Oh, yeah.
A Brief History of Humankind. And that is fascinating.
Oh.
I'm thinking to go and reread the whole thing again because I loved it. But there's a sequel called Homo Deus, I think.
Yeah, that just came out, I think.
Yeah, like a month ago or something. So Sapiens is all about like kind of where humans and human society and like our current civilization came from. And Homo Deus is like, where are we going? So it looks to the future and, you know, where are we going to be in the next 10,000 years potentially? What will humanity turn into? And he's already started like towards the end of the first book, he starts talking about some of those concepts and it's scary and fascinating at the same time. Cool. Anyway,
yeah.
Random segue.
From the defenders to the development of mankind.
Yeah, man.
What roads we take?
So the way I got there was like Robert McKee's story, which I started reading but didn't finish. And then that's why I don't know all of the terms that you were talking about. But we need to go back to, back to defenders. So, yeah, when does that actually drop? When does it actually come
August
out?
August 17th.
August? Okay, so we still got some time. Okay, so we got a couple more trailers for TV shows. What do we go to next? I mean, did we talk? Okay, let's go to Cloak and Dagger while we're still on now.
Yeah,
we're still on comic movies.
Yeah, don't have much hope for it.
That's pretty much my reaction.
Yeah.
It looks even worse than Black Lightning, to tell you the truth. It looks like it's got better production quality. I like the look and feel of it better. But it still looks like a Lifetime channel show. So, you know, like a midday movie with a really low budget and like really soppy subject matter.
Yeah. But it could have, and that's the thing, it could have been so great because I recently started to reread the old Cloak and Dagger story. I like those characters. I have a soft spot for them.
Really?
Yeah. I think it's this typical Marvel origin story, but cranked up to 11 with the two homeless kids that take magic crack and get their superpowers from it, essentially. And it would have made for great TV, at least in my opinion. And you could have introduced so many great characters that weren't used in the other Marvel shows, like are great, like Silvermane as the drug lord.
Well, that's the thing. I think it's coming across like it's not going to be like the Defenders. Like, sorry, if it was a Netflix show and if it was a Marvel branded kind of Netflix show, you can imagine that there's going to be like a lot of comic book tie-ins and references and like other characters come in, like Silvermane.
Yeah.
Because it's a network show on Freeform, I'm just imagining it's going to be like a soap opera. I mean, so we've got to see it's in terms of them using their powers. So Cloak and Dagger, I mean, just for a high-level summary, I don't know, maybe you would be better off trying to explain the summary, but it's a high school boy and girl, effectively. She has the power to generate lightning blades, blades of light, daggers, and he has, he's effectively like a shadow monster and he can teleport through his cloak anywhere. So she can run into the cloak and then they can teleport out in another location.
And he can trap people in his cloak.
Oh, yes.
And they go insane because it's a portal to another dimension.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't quite clear on where people go when they're inside the cloak. But then there's like, it's an interracial dynamic because he's black and she's white and she's like the blondest white girl and he's, I think, are they both from the streets or was it just him who was like from the streets?
She ends up homeless.
Right.
And he takes her in.
Yeah. But they were both experimented on also by the Roxxon Corporation. Like, that's a big part of the story. Because I think in the Miles Morales Spider-Man, Cloak and Dagger come into it. Around, I don't know, I want to say episode 12-ish. Like the last couple of Miles Morales's that I've read, like when Miles Morales first came out, he was interacting a lot with them. like they all formed a part of a team together and stuff.
Okay, because I thought I think they appeared in the Peter Parker Spider-Man days of the Ultimate Universe. But yeah, it's.
I mean, I'm sure they were around then, but I didn't read all of the Peter Parker. So yeah, in the Miles Morales Ultimate Spider-Man, they team up with Miles Morales a little bit. They may have been running around before that with Peter Parker as well, but I didn't read those ones. Yeah. But why I brought it up is because that's where they talk about the Roxxon Corporation and how they were experimented on and stuff. So yeah, I mean, oh, it looks like it's going to be. It's not going to be the kind of show where you're going to have a lot of power display and a lot of action. I'm expecting a lot of soap opera type drama with the two characters and their families,
which could work out if you have the right story. If the story works, we could look beyond all the shortcomings or the suspected shortcomings.
Yeah. So again, you know, I think it'll be one of those things where you just kind of watch the first couple episodes and make your decision based on whether you want to continue.
Yeah.
But what's cool about it, and, you know, it's not that I'm super negative, hopefully. That's not how it's coming across. But what's cool about it is it gives people who might be interested in that kind of show and that kind of subject matter an in to these characters and comic books, effectively, like who are Cloak and Dagger. And then that helps overall comic books and, you know, these types of stories becoming more mainstream.
Yeah.
And it potentially, maybe that's where I need to open up my mind a little bit, is that not every story needs to be the type of comic book story that I want to read, you know, because comic books are super diverse in the types of stories they tell and how they tell them. Whereas I kind of like just like one sliver of that, you know, so.
Yeah, find your niche and or your preferred kind of story and then roll with it.
Yeah, and celebrate it.
There are other playgrounds in town.
So maybe I shouldn't be so harsh on Black Lightning either. Maybe that's what. Maybe we need a B-grade, super costumed, puffy armor guy. You know,
who
maybe
knows?
That's what we need.
With a glowing belt buckle.
because the irony of this whole thing is the aesthetic that I like is the Batman v Superman aesthetic. I like the dark, gritty, self-serious side of the way they present, like the way they created the characters and the production design of Batman v Superman. I mean, it was maybe a little bit too dark for me because I prefer that over the Marvel style. Which is, I mean, we already talked about the colors and stuff previously, but the Marvel style is almost like a little bit too washed out for me. I like my comic books to be that dark, gritty, intense,
okay,
over the top, almost kind of look. So I that's what I like. That's why I can watch Batman v Superman, because like aesthetically, it looks great to me. I think it looks so cool. And Wonder Woman now is an extension of that, because it's actually taken that, it feels like it's taken that aesthetic to a large extent, but brightened it up, colored it up, and then made it kind of more happier. So that's why I'm really looking forward to Wonder Woman. And despite the fact that I can't stand all the DC storytelling, I think stuff looks great. But unfortunately, there's lots of other types of ways to tell these stories and sort of make these worlds look. So I just, maybe it's me. Anyway, I don't know. I just had a realization then. Because that's what, I mean, my favorite sci-fi at the moment, well, pretty much for the longest time, has been Battlestar Galactica. Because that's, I love the grittiness. I love the realness. I love the fact that when they were working on the ships and the fighters, they had oil under their nails, you know, like it gave you that sense of realism. And that's what I like, you know,
just the small things.
Whereas if it's too kind of like cartoony, or like if it makes me think of Power Rangers, I tune out.
I can understand that.
Anyway, all right, so that's Cloak and Dagger. It doesn't look bad. It looks better than a lot of the other stuff that we talked about. I thought Gifted, which we didn't actually finish on, but I thought Gifted looked good as well. Like I thought it looked good. I think story might, I don't know.
Of course, the production budgets and effects today, we're spoiled with budgets and effects these days. Shows look like, at least there's a decent look to almost every genre show these days.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
I mean, if you go back and you watch like the 90s superhero shows, like we had Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman, like, and you know,
that never
things
set
look
out
so much better now.
Yeah, but that never set out to be a show about Superman.
It was about their relationship, right? And I think this is almost going to be a great analog to Cloak and Dagger. It's going to be about the relationship with, like, every now and again, we just have to fight a bad guy because, you know, we have powers. But yeah, it's more about the relationship.
That would be neat.
Which was...
They played that out.
Which was a great show. I mean, Lois and Clark.
Yeah. I enjoyed that too.
In the absence of nothing else superhero on TV, Lois and Clark was awesome.
It was an amazing show. Oh, it's just the good memories because I always watched it with my grandfather and my brother.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, family time.
Well, not with your grandfather and brother, but I watch it with my family as well.
Oh, you knew my grandfather too.
Yeah. Oh, God. All right, so that's Cloak and Dagger. So what else do we have up here? Star Trek Discovery. So we got two that we were going to pit against each other, right? So yeah, Star Trek Discovery and The Orville. So, thoughts?
You know, I'm glad we get a new Star Trek TV show, but I'm not that enamored by the trailer for that show being Star Trek Discovery.
Yeah. I mean, from behind the scenes, Star Trek Discovery has had a lot of problems. There's been a lot of issues with trying to pull that show together. Yeah. And I think it shows in the trailer. The trailer is like super uneven. I mean, it's not even super uneven. It's like, you're like, wait, what's going on with this show? Because everything looks just a little bit off. Everything looks like the Klingons don't look Klingon enough.
Oh,
you know,
that is something that I already liked in the second Star Trek reboot film.
Oh. Into Darkness?
Into Darkness, thank you.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to say Wrath of Khan, but...
Right.
Yeah. That's another universe. And I really dug that they made the Klingons scary again.
Yeah.
And all out scary with the black skin and the armor, and they look like they mean business. It's not like, because classic Klingons kind of got softened up when the...
Well,
when the
ones with like Worf and stuff on the Next Generation.
I thought that was cool, but once the Jem Hadar arrive in DS9 and basically hand everybody their asses, the Klingons lost, even the Romulans, they lost a lot of their luster. The Romulans especially, with Star Trek Nemesis. So I'm really digging the new Klingon design.
In Discovery,
yeah. In Discovery.
But they look softened out. They don't look scary.
Really? With the sharpened teeth and stuff?
Did they have super sharp? They looked kind of like, to me, so I've watched it like maybe like earlier, so I can't remember specifically, but I remember thinking they look like porpoises have been made Klingons. Because I thought they really like rounded out and softened off a lot of the detail around their foreheads.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know. All right, let me rewatch just the Klingon scene and see how that looks. I was pretty much thinking that they don't look as scary and they look kind of like, that's not what a Klingon looks like. And the other thing about it too is that it's going to be on CBS All Access, so they're trying to use this show to sell CBS's own channel. Like, how many more channels do we need? Like, how many more subscription services do people have to watch this content? Like, I think the industry is just shooting itself in the foot with sort of slicing up all of these channels rather than focusing on actually making good shows that are actually going to be worth paying extra money for.
Put everything, or at least, you know, realize that you could achieve more by putting all your things into one pool.
Yeah.
Like be it Netflix, Amazon Prime, Hulu, whatever, but just centralize the whole thing and rule with the content. Rule with a content fist.
That's the thing. Everyone's trying to keep control of their content and make sure they make a buck. But what it's gonna mean is that you're just gonna increase piracy because people don't wanna pay. Like if the people who wanna watch Star Trek, I don't think it's compelling enough to have Netflix and Hulu and your cable subscription. And then also potentially pay additionally for CBS All Access to only get this one show. Yeah.
But to be honest, you know, judging from that trailer and from what I've read, I wonder if the series makes it longer than, say, 3 seasons.
Yeah, fair enough. You know what? I think just looking at the Klingons now, I think I got it wrong, which is not surprising. But the main guy on the ship is not a Klingon. The Klingons are those other crazy creatures that are kind of screaming in the background,
Yeah.
right? Okay, all right, they look scary. I'll give them that. But they don't look like Klingons. That's why I didn't even pick them up. I thought they were just like another species or something.
No, they're Klingons.
That's the Klingons now? They kind of went over that, and now it's like the other way. They went overboard with the Klingons.
Yeah,
Like,
they're the Klingons, you know? Back in the 70s, people shat not themselves when you mentioned Klingons.
right. Okay.
Okay, they don't look as scary as the guy in
No,
the Orville.
they look scarier. Maybe, I don't know. I don't know. I kind of, because I, anyway. I'll give them that. Those Klingons look badass. So they look cool. They look cool. I don't know how, and it could be, you know, and we were going back before. The Klingons got humanized as the show went on, right? As the series
Yeah.
went on. These Klingons will be very more, they're much more difficult to humanize.
It's not a detriment that they got humanized because they're like a species that has been around for, I don't know what the time frame in the Star Trek universe is, but at some point, and with the story set up with the crumbling Klingon Empire, it was only a matter of series until they got folded into the Federation somehow.
Right.
But making them, you know, making them badass again.
Because this happens before Kirk, so yeah. So this happens well there.
I think it happens after Kirk.
Well, doesn't it say 10 years before Kirk? Is
Really?
that
Oh,
how?
I'm sorry. I thought it happens after Star Trek Into Darkness because they mentioned the exploration mission there.
Oh, yeah. It says 10 years before Kirk.
Oh,
Yeah,
okay.
10 years before Kirk, Spock, and the Enterprise. So this is a prequel series to the Star Trek. So what it also means is that, well, all of the timeline stuff doesn't come to account. So it's effectively, because the time, I mean, this is going to be weird now. The timeline with the Star Trek series, kind of the shift happens because Spock goes back in time, right?
Yeah,
So
but
Spock goes back in time into the first Star Trek, in the
doesn't
first Star Trek reboot.
he goes into another dimension. This is a separate reality.
Oh, okay. All right, so I was going to say, so it's not exactly the same, because previous to that we had Star Trek Enterprise
Yeah, which was
the captain before Kirk. Yeah.
yeah.
So this might be parallel to that, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But if it's I mean, it does say 10 years before the Enterprise. So it says Kirk, Spock, and the Enterprise. So does that mean like the Enterprise as a ship? But that's always existed, hasn't it? I don't know. We've got this, we had the Space Shuttle Enterprise, you know. There's a direct line. There's a direct line to those. I don't know, maybe SpaceX is going to make the next one because the Enterprise has been retired now. Are you excited to watch Star Trek Discovery? Trying to bring the cart back on the rails.
Yes, I'm looking forward to seeing new Star Trek, but as I've said earlier, I'm not anticipating to be wooed by it.
Okay. What about the Orville? So this is a spoof parody of Star Trek and these types of shows.
It's helmed by Seth MacFarlane, who also stars in it as the captain of the Orville, the ship that the show is named after. And you know, I'm looking forward to the, it'll probably end up in almost the same vein of humor as Family Guy, and I think American Dad is the other show he does. But
Yeah.
it excited me more than Star Trek Discovery, perhaps because Galaxy Quest was such a nice spoof slash tribute to
It was
Trek.
fun. Yeah.
And this
I really
feels,
enjoyed Galaxy Quest. That was
yeah,
cool.
and this feels like it'll continue this kind of homaging the Trek universe
Yeah.
or the love for Star Trek.
Yeah. I think it's cool. I mean, I agree with what you're saying in terms of there's a risk because Seth MacFarlane's involved. It's just going to be very Seth MacFarlane, but it is directed by Jon Favreau, so hopefully,
Yeah.
you know, he can temper Seth MacFarlane's craziness, and keep things a bit more sane, I guess. But it looks great. It looks awesome. Like the production quality, the ships, the ship designs, like they've obviously spent a lot of effort to try to make it look good and sort of all work and create that world. And it really shows through the trailer even.
And potty humor can work if it has a heart.
Yes. If it has a heart. All right.
You need a heart to take a dump. Yeah.
All right. So I want to flip now back to the Star Wars universe.
Yeah.
Because the season 4 trailer for Rebels has been released as well. Now, I haven't finished season 3. So you're allowed to give us a spoiler-free review because...
of season 3. Season 3 was amazing, and I don't know why people complain about it so much, because I thought even the filler episodes were more enjoyable than in season 1. But season 4 will bring the series to an end.
That's right. This is going to be the final season.
Yeah.
Which I fully respect.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I love Star Wars Rebels, I like the fact that they've got an end to the story.
And I mean, it doesn't mean that it has to... This iteration, perhaps this iteration of the Ghost crew will go away, but come back in another function in the Star Wars universe, because there's already talks about another animated series being developed.
Right, okay.
Yeah, and I think after the events of season 2, I thought that season 3 would be the last season.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but what I have to admit is that the trailer is, to say that it's not as exciting as the trailers that came before is wrong, but I just feel... How did Robin put it in Young Justice? In Young Justice, I don't feel overwhelmed, I just feel whelmed.
I'm whelmed, yeah.
it looks great, and we're surely going to get more great moments from the show and more great episodes, and it only will feature like 13 or 14 episodes. It won't go full 23 episodes.
Yeah.
You know, I feel sad because I grew to like those characters, and this show felt like, for me, it felt like Star Wars truly came back because of the designs and
the sense of adventure.
And the sense of adventure, yeah.
And the characters, the characters, I mean, are really good. And the key thing is that each of the characters have a journey that they're going on, which is awesome. It's not just, we're just going to go on like adventures. We're, you know, it's all part of this overall story, and they're changing over time. And as you learn more about them, it really opens up the world. It shows you a part of the Star Wars universe that you didn't see otherwise. Yeah.
And Ezra never took over the series.
Yeah. I mean, so like his story is one of the main backbones of the overall series, right? But yeah, it's really cool that everyone's got space to kind of flex their creative story muscle. And it's not just the Ezra show. Yeah. That's cool. All right. I'm excited. I mean, I need to go back and try to catch up on all the episodes from season 3, because I started season 3, but then everything else came up as well, so I didn't get to finish it.
And I think if you watch the episodes back to back or at your own leisure, perhaps the filler episodes don't feel as disappointing as they obviously did to some other people. I was just glad that I got to watch a Rebels episode each week.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I used to love, it was my, Sunday morning show, you know, with breakfast. So, the last Sunday mornings have been very crazy the last couple of weeks. So I haven't been into that routine as much, which is why I haven't got them. But yeah, it's great. It's great to sit down with Rebels and just sort of go on that adventure for like half an hour. So
should we jump to the other?
We should. So I need to take a commercial break. So can we mark the time, because we can cut this bit out?
Of course.
And then we can say, when we come back, we can pick up with movies. Cool. So shall we move on to movies?
Let's move on to movies.
All right, cool. One of the did we not have a session? We didn't talk actually since the Thor Ragnarok trailer came out.
Right? Yeah,
that was the best trailer I've seen all year. I think like. I think I watched it like about 20 times in a row when the day it came out. Like I was just, I loved it so much.
Everything from music to the things you see in the trailer. It's such a...
Just like, I mean, the trailer is awesome. It's like, just, the thing that got me was when Thor walks out into the arena and he looks scared. Like he looks like... He doesn't know what's going to happen. You can see the anxiety on Chris Hemsworth's face. And they're saying like, and now, you know, the final contender or whatever it is, you're incredible. And then like Hulk just like tears the door apart and bounds out of the thing. And then Chris Hemsworth's face just goes into just pure joy. It was such a great transition. I was like, that's, and then he's like screams like, yes, you know, it was just so cool. I loved it so much. And then what I love how dorky Thor can be in these movies. Cause then he turns around and explains why he's so happy. Like that's just so cool. It's like, I know him. He's a friend from work. which is just so mundane, right?
Yeah. But
because
so effective.
It's so effective, like it works so well, but it's such a crazy explanation. It's like, because there's like so much, there's so many layers to that. It's like, first of all, Thor sees the Avengers as work. it's like I've got a job, like I'm not just the Prince of Asgard, like I go to work. And like, this is like the guys that I work with, you know?
But it totally makes sense if you've seen the shorts, what Thor did during
his time off.
Yeah. Yeah, it totally makes sense that he sees the Avengers' work in the realization that everybody else has an occupation in this world that he does on a daily basis. Yeah, save the world on a daily basis for 8 hours a day.
Oh, God. No, it was fantastic. It was so cool. It was so cool. And I love how Hulk was almost like, didn't give, you know, he was just like, ugh. And he just kept on running. It was cool. And then Thor's face changes again.
Yeah.
When Hulk just keeps on running, he's like, oh, crap, here we go. You know?
We have to do this.
Yeah. But that was cool. But the trailer looks great. I mean, the other cool thing, I mean, it was cool on so many levels. Like using Led Zeppelin's Immigrant Song was great. Awesome soundtrack, I thought. Chris Hemsworth, Kate Blanchett as Hela.
With the
looks
helmet.
Fantastic.
Oh, yeah. As she turns around and that scenes where, is it the Valkyrie?
The Valkyries, yeah.
And you have the light blocked by the clouds.
Yeah.
Which are moving on in real time while the action on the ground happens in slow motion. Oh, it looks
cool.
So great.
It's like visually, it looks fantastic. Like, you know, I talked about before how I love the gritty, dark aspects of the DC stuff, and not Suicide Squad specifically, but more Batman v Superman. Ironically, the Zack Snyder aesthetic. This looks fantastic too. Like this is so cool. That's pretty much the best I've seen the Marvel Cinematic Universe look. Yeah. I think. I mean, Guardians of the Galaxy 2 looked great as well, and we'll get to that, I guess, in our Guardians review.
Yeah,
but this is like the next level. Yeah. I think.
Just pause the scene where you see the room where the Grandmaster resides with his guests, the launch.
Oh, yes.
And you have the...
There's so much happening.
Yeah, there's a mini celestial in the background and all the Jack Kirby machinery on the plastered on the walls.
Yeah. You were like, geekasm.
Yeah, I watched the trailer with Susie and she said, oh, this is great. And I reversed... back to the scene, put it on, because it, you know, it finally feels like this movie feels like a comic book came to life. Everything is so colorful.
Yeah.
A muted color palette.
Well, it's still colorful, but it's got all the aesthetics that we are used to in the comic books. Like the Hulk's greens are green and it's not just the colors, but it's also the way they've sort of framed the colors and composed the scene. Because everything is set so it looks dynamic and it looks like, you know, like there's so much, there's so much of energy in every scene.
It finally feels like a Jack Kirby comic came alive. Everything feels bigger than life. Even if when Thor puts the helmet on. The design of the helmet.
That was great. The design of the helmet was awesome. Yeah,
which is so reminiscent of the classic helmet, but has this sci-fi look.
And what's cool about it is the way it clicks on to get the to get the guards, which also give him his kind of his little wingtips on the top of the helmet. It's almost like this looks like any other normalized kind of normal stuff you're used to. But then he flicks it down, and you're like, oh, that's so cool.
Cool, yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Loved it. It was, again, a great trailer. Everything looked, the visuals, the sound, the humor, like just the tone, because it was that mix of like serious and funny as at the same time. It was cool.
It looks like an adventure.
Yeah. And that's what, I mean, that's kind of how they're pegging this movie, right? It's going to be a Thor, what do they say, a Thor and Hulk road trip?
Yeah.
through like different planets and around the galaxy.
I was really amazed.
I'm looking forward to it.
I was really amazed by that trailer.
And,
you know, when we're reviewing, I guess the next trailer we'll review will be the next big blockbuster franchise thing. I think the trailer came out the next day, and it's sad to say that I'm sad to say that the trailer or the teaser battles was won by Thor Ragnarok.
Oh, yeah, I definitely agree. So, I mean, we might as well flip to that next one. You're talking about the Episode 8 trailer, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it felt kind of more of the same.
Yeah.
Compared to Thor Ragnarok. Thor Ragnarok was fresh. It was like, this is like going to be so awesome and so cool. Whereas Episode 8 kind of like, oh, yeah. And then another Star Wars movie is coming out.
And quite frankly, if we didn't know that Rian Johnson is the director or was the director on that movie, I would have reconsidered watching Episode 8 at the cinema.
Yeah.
quite frankly, because I felt underwhelmed. They can't show anything. They can't show too much at this point in time. I'm aware of that, and that has, because of Celebration happening, they had to have something from Episode 8
to give us something.
But I thought it was just a continuation of the is it the black box approach that J.J. Abrams took?
Yeah, as in like hide everything.
Yeah,
yeah. There weren't too many reveals. I mean, yeah, the approach is very much about, it feels like building the mystery. I mean, even at the end of the trailer, somebody, we're all assuming it's Luke, says this is the end of the Jedi. You know, and then the whole speculation, because I mean, we don't have any confirmation about the Grey Jedi and all that sort of stuff yet, right? So what does it mean? And it's all about asking more and more questions. But at the same time, it feels geared towards people who are already going to be buying their tickets for Star Wars, you know? Whereas, yeah, I mean, we all put our hands up, right? Yeah. But I think the things that make it fantastic is when you can bring other people who are not fans in and show them how it's exciting and cool and something to get like hyped up about. And I think Thor did that to a much better extent compared to Star Wars. I mean, the other thing to think about, though, is that Star Wars trailer, the actual, I mean, that was their trailer one. So it was, they were both the first trailers from the franchises. It wasn't really a teaser. And then we're going to get the real trailer like in a couple months or something, you know? So yeah, I mean, if you compare it like for like, I think Thor definitely won out on that one.
Absolutely. It looks great, and if you turn up the volume high enough, there are enough audio cues and Easter eggs in there. Yeah, but
it didn't, because it's so consistent with what we're expecting from Star Wars.
Yeah.
There were no surprises. We would have been, it was kind of met expectations, you know? Yeah. Like if we didn't get that, we would have been disappointed, but we got it. So we're like, okay, yeah, I can see that. It's good. Episode 8's coming, you know?
Like, we had to be worried if they canceled the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, what was cool about, like, Rogue One and stuff is that it actually showed us some really cool new locations and, things like that. Did this one have anything that really jumped out in terms of locations? Because it was very much like just what we were expecting.
Right? Only the new planet where those ships or speeders cut into the surface and release this red mist.
Yeah,
I forgot the name of the planet, which looked great, but made
it
no great, sense.
But it looked like Tatooine. It looked like a mountainous region of Tatooine. Yeah. You know, it didn't. I mean, because that was just desert. They were all flying above, right? So it'd be interesting to see how they use that in the movie. Yeah. But to me, it sounds like it felt like it. They were just like a stunt flight crew releasing some red mist, doing skywriting really low. You know?
Yeah. I'm scared that they are forcing this movie to be the Empire of this trilogy, Empire Strikes Back of this trilogy. If in a trilogy you have to have the Empire vibe in the second part, but yeah this because is all the controversies
the around, New Order Strikes Back.
Yeah, and because all the controversy that Episode 7 was a remake of Episode 4. Which isn't a bad thing inherently, but
yeah. Well, the key thing, and going back to the discussion we were having before, it needs to be in service of the story.
Yeah.
And so if they're not doing anything interesting with the story, and that's the feeling that I get, is like it feels is very much focused on the concept of Star Wars rather than the characters that they've created.
Yeah.
What I would have really liked to have seen more of is, why should we care about these characters? Why should we care about where these characters are going next? So they showed us some explosions, and they showed us the X-Wings flying really low, releasing the red smoke. But that doesn't, you know, that's not going to get me in if I don't care about these characters. You know, it's just going to be, it's going to be like Batman v Superman. It's visually cool and looks nice, but, you know, might as well play it as like a wallpaper background rather than a story that I want to watch over and over again, you know? So anyway, that's the challenge. I mean, I hope that they're building towards that, and I hope it is the black box approach like you were talking about. So where they're sort of keeping a lot of the character things close to their chest. But they need to start leaking some of that information or start, you know, using some of that information in the marketing campaign to get people in, because that kind of backfired a little bit on them with the way they treated the characters for Episode 7. So, you know, people were surprised about that Rey was the Jedi and, you know, all that sort of stuff. And they could have gotten on the front foot with that if they had set those expectations in the marketing campaign itself.
Yeah.
So sometimes it works against you if you be too mysterious, you know, it's about striking that artful balance.
But I guess now that they have the experience gathered from the Episode 7 release, perhaps they can make some more informed decisions about when to leak what, or because the start for the merchandise sale is in September, I think. Force Friday will be at the end of September.
Oh, right.
And at least in August we have to, or we should know more, so people go out and buy action figures and stuff to build an emotional connection.
But that feels like backwards. You know, you shouldn't need the merchandise to build an emotional connection to the characters.
A big part of Star Wars is a big part of the Marvel.
Yeah, but you do it the
Wars
other way, right? You get the characters right first, and then you sell the character. Then you sell the action figures.
Yeah, but
because otherwise, I mean, the other flip side of that is you buy all the action figures, you create your own characters around them, you play out your own stories, and then when you watch the movie, you're like, oh, my stories were better than what they showed me.
That's the problem I have with Rogue One, that I think I don't like the movie as much, but I really dig the action figures and the designs.
Yeah, because you see, I mean, you can get inspired by the designs of the characters in the action figures and then create your own characters, like you claim the character before the movie does.
Yeah.
You know? And so it's kind of backwards. Like you want to, like when you buy a Superman action figure or a Batman action figure, it's because you know who Superman and Batman are. And you're buying it because you want to play Superman and Batman as those characters. Whereas I think, yes, giving us the blank character action figure first, giving us the blank action figure first without knowing who this person is, forces you to define the person for yourself. Based on how they look, right? And then you create your own character that you think is compelling to yourself, and then you see the real version, and you're like, my version's better. You know, I don't know.
I totally get it, but I just dig when the smaller niece comes by and takes up one of the action figures from the shelves and creates a story around that figure without being suppressed by knowing anything about the character. Some interesting things come up. Like the Joker is the good guy and Batman is the bad guy because he's a clown. Why should he be the bad guy?
Clowns are not evil. Okay, your niece should not watch it.
Yeah.
Let me just tell you. Scarred me for life, that movie. Alright. So yeah, so that's on that note, that's episode 8. So I guess we still, you know, there's still a lot more to come from the episode 8 direction, so we just have to wait, right? And so the other big one coming out soon in the trailer that we got was Blade Runner.
Yeah.
So what's your thoughts on that one?
I like it visually. It looks great because you could almost take every shot from the trailer and frame it and hang it up on a wall.
Yeah. Yeah, it looks beautiful. It does look really cool.
The only thing I'm concerned about is will the movie actually do anything for the Blade Runner story? Because I consider Blade Runner in itself to be a great movie that doesn't need any pre or sequels.
Yeah.
I'm really blank. It looks great. Perhaps there's an interesting they have an interesting story that warrants this releasing this movie.
Yeah, again it's gonna come down to the story and the characters. I mean, I think it might end up, you know, it could go down the route of Ghost in the Shell for different reasons. It's like, again, if they don't make it compelling enough for people to want to see it, then, you know, it's just candy that you can watch on streaming or something, you know, because the first one was just so iconic that I don't know why you would even risk trying to do a sequel like this. So I hope that they've only done the sequel because it is going to be super cool and super awesome and actually live up to all the expectations around it. The director is the same director as the guy who did Arrival. So
Villeneuve.
Denis Villeneuve or Denis Villeneuve, depending on how you pronounce his name. Yeah, so like he's a great, I mean, Arrival was a great movie until the last like 20 seconds. I think you and I, we did discuss that. I mean, spoiler warning if you haven't seen it, but at the end of it, there's a stupid line that, you know, I don't know why they included it in the movie, but when Hawkeye says, let's have a baby. Oh, God. But anyway, I mean, the Arrival was great. It was great storytelling. It was great to see sort of the way they put that story and characters and stuff together. So I'm hoping that he brings that level of storytelling to this. And so, you know, in both of service to the story and the concept and the characters. And yeah, I mean, I'd love to see an updated version. I just don't want the updated version to suck. And I don't want it to be a mashup or like a really bad interpretation and trying to make it better than what they think it was or needs to be, you know.
I mean, there are two things that are bothering me. Jared Leto and just a line of dialogue where some female person that's somehow associated with Ryan Gosling's character says, I told you there's more to you than that.
Yeah.
And that kind of killed the movie for me because it gives the whole thing this prophetic background.
Yeah.
Which I don't know. Could be the best movie that comes out this year, but
yeah, I think I know what you're saying in the sense of like, we don't need him to be Neo from the Matrix. Yeah. Like it shouldn't be a story about the One.
Yeah.
You know, because that's kind of, I think, besides the point with the Blade Runner series. And I hope they're not setting it up to be the start of a franchise either, which is problem with Ridley Scott these days. You know, it's like, I think what made Blade Runner cool was that if you're going to tell that kind of story, if you tell any story really, you want to put everything into it. You don't want to make it a setup for a sequel. I mean, if you end up making a sequel, that's great.
Yeah.
But you want to put everything into the story to make that story the best it can be. So you shouldn't be sort of setting up all of these things for a payoff that might come in a second movie or third movie, if those movies ever get made.
Made, yeah.
You know, and I think that's the sucky thing. So hopefully it doesn't go down that route where they're saying, let's make a Blade Runner franchise and it goes on forever.
Not it.
In that voice. But I mean, it looks fantastic. So I'm pretty much, I mean, I said I'm definitely going to see Ghost in the Shell as well, but I didn't end up seeing it. And I think at the end of the day, the visuals are not compelling enough to get me in the seat in the theater. I mean, I appreciate good visuals, but then I can also wait to watch it on a nice 4K TV in HDR, yep. You know? So I can do that in the comfort of my own home. I think if you want to, it needs to be the party that I can't afford to miss. And I think that only needs to come from where you can really get a really good story with really cool characters and then make it, communicate it where you bring everybody in. Yep. You know, you make it so that everybody wants to be a part of this thing, because then there's an urgency to see it on opening day. Otherwise, I can wait. I'll wait for the DVD or Blu-ray.
Exactly. Or if Netflix ever picks it up.
Yeah. Which at the same time, like, then I'll put it on my to watch list and I'll get to it when I get through, like, you know, the 7 seasons of whatever other show I'm watching. Yeah. Anyway, I'm getting through Death Note, the anime, right now. So.
Which isn't a short.
No, that's like, it's, I think I'm like 17 either. Or 20 something. Yeah. So got a while to go. So anyway, I'm not going to go into Death Note. I'll finish it first before I get into it. But anyway, I'm enjoying it. All right. So that was Blade Runner. That was Blade Runner. And I think that's pretty much the movie list that we had this time. Oh no, we had a couple. We got two more key ones. Sorry, I didn't go scroll down.
After Blade Runner, I think Blade Runner summarized the Dark Tower trailer, or our thoughts of the Blade Runner trailer summarized the Dark Tower trailer for me.
Yeah. So, I mean, you just felt it wasn't like enough in there? Or?
It feels like, oh, we're setting up this franchise, which the Dark Tower trailer definitely could need to tell its story. But there's also just this one line. There is this coda that the gunslingers use. I don't aim with my hand, I aim with my eye, and so on. And the last line is, I don't kill with my gun, I kill with my heart.
Yeah.
And I thought, I mean, I don't, obviously I haven't seen the movie and I don't know what they are going for, but at this stage of the story, that sums up the character of Roland, but he's so much more than just a killer, as it turns out.
Yeah.
And I think
have you read the books?
I read all, yeah, I finished the books, and
right.
I think Idris Elba will brings something to that role. I see him as the character, but I don't want him reduced to just be a killer.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is Matthew McConaughey as the Man in Black, Walter. Yeah. That definitely interesting actor choices, but I don't know. I think the trailer is lackluster for me.
Really?
Yeah. Hmm. It looks great, but it doesn't feel right. But as you've mentioned earlier, perhaps it's just me. You can't drag the thing into another medium, screaming.
Yeah, but I mean, at the same time, I mean, the whole point of doing these things is to try to compel excitement, right?
Yeah.
So it's interesting that as a fan of the books, or at least knowing the books, you're like, is it just that this is kind of the first part of the story and you've like finished the story? It's kind of like when you're reading Game of Thrones, it's like you kind of know where all these characters get to. And then when you see Jon Snow in season one, you're like, oh, come on, dude. I know what you can do,
yeah.
You know? Jon Snow's a bad example, by the way. But
he knows nothing, I heard.
He knows nothing. I mean, if ever there was a guy who didn't know anything, it's Jon Snow. But is it just that Roland's at the stage of his journey when he starts off in this movie where he has to be that version where he is? And I don't know. I've not read the books. Well, I liked the concept and I liked the idea, and it felt to me that Roland hopefully goes on a journey where he may start off being a killer. He may start off being quite two-dimensional, even to himself. But in interacting with, is it Josh? Who's the boy? I can't remember the boy's name.
Jake.
He grows and discovers a part of himself that he didn't, potentially wasn't in touch with before. And that's what sort of, you know, because I think that's a, to me, that can be a part, that's like that's the arc, you know?
Yeah.
How does Roland become what he needs to become? And Jake's part of the catalyst that helps create that, as well as Matthew McConaughey being the adversary in the background. So from a story point of view, I can see those things working together. How far along that journey Roland gets to as a part of this first movie, still to be determined. Like, obviously we need to see that. But I think, yeah, I mean, it almost feels a little bit like Wolf and Cub, you know?
Yeah.
So you've got like the big bad warrior and kind of the innocent child that needs protecting, but also can be quite powerful in its own right. So I like that dynamic. I think that that's a really cool. It's like Wolverine and Weapon and X-23 in Logan. You know, I think if they can make it so that they can sort of push and work off each other and force growth for each other, it'll be really cool.
Yeah, I haven't seen it. I haven't seen it in that way. I was just disappointed with, I am the big bad killer, I'm coming to get you. That was just McConaughey, but look out.
That's part of what I like about it, though. Like, I like that it's almost like, you know, the characters come across as a little bit like they've just set the archetypes.
Yeah.
You've got the big bad killer good guy who is ruthlessly fighting. It's like Night Watch versus Day Watch, you know? It's like, you know, like you've got the bad guy who's a bad guy and there's no ifs or buts about it. And then you've got the good guy who will do anything to stop the bad guy. But then this little boy shows up and you're like, uh-oh, what's going to happen? You know, to me, that's the excitement of the show. And to tell the truth, when I knew of the series, but I've never really watched it, I didn't know Jake was a thing. Like, I didn't know Jake existed in the story. So it was a surprise to me, because when I saw the trailer, like I knew it was going to be Matthew McConaughey and Idris Elba as the point and the counterpoint, but I didn't know Jake was in the middle. And so that to me added a lot of interest.
An interesting thing in the first book, and if they keep it in the movie with Jake, I wonder how it will affect this version of Roland. And I don't want to spoil it for anybody, but I guess people who read the books and listen to this podcast will know. If they keep that in the movie and facilitate the change in Roland's characters, keep that and not make it the classic arc of the good guy, of the white day watch guy turning a bit gray.
Hold on. Are we like just mixing up too many movies in one description here? Anyway, yeah.
Becoming. Like I said, if they keep that in there and facilitate the character development through that event, it'll gonna be interesting.
Right.
Because I think Idris Elba could play that version of Roland very well. That educated, wise cowboy warrior monk.
Yeah. Do you know how this movie fits in with the book series?
It's completely. It's just so borrowing.
I mean, like, the continuity of the canon and how it all fits together.
The movie is all over the place. They already introduced things in the movie that are mentioned in the book way behind. It's like Game of Thrones. I think Game of Thrones doesn't adhere to the continuity of the books.
After a point, yeah.
Okay.
What I heard, and this is potential spoiler, but everything that's happened in the books, it's kind of like The Matrix, it's happened over and over again.
Yeah.
And the book is one iteration of what's happened. And so this movie now will be another iteration. So everything may happen, but it may happen differently.
Yeah, it could have been. Yeah, it could be a later or an earlier part. That's one of the great things of the book, that even if some people and people I know were disappointed by the ending, and Stephen King gives a spoiler warning and says, if you don't want to be disappointed, stop at this point. Call it.
Seriously?
Yeah, call it a story.
In the book?
Yeah, it's in the book. It's don't read on, because it could.
Is that like halfway through like a halfway through a chapter.
No, it's like a note
from the author.
It's really at the end. The story ends, and then he says, "Okay, if you could not like the part that's coming next, so let's call it a day. It's okay for me. If it's okay for you." And then you read on, and then comes the thing where Roland starts basically at the first book again.
Oh, right. So that's the point of repeat. Yeah.
But
right.
he has a horn.
Really?
The horn, yeah.
Can he bring down a 700-foot ice wall?
No. it's the horn of Gilead, which is his friend Cuthbert had with him.
Right.
Yeah, so obviously...
This is all from the movie, yeah, this is from the book, so I have no idea.
It's from the book. So he starts the journey from perhaps wiser, from another point of view, and perhaps it could affect the journey in different ways.
Right,
and how could his journey end? And I think it was a great ending, because the books already establish multiple universes and stuff, so I thought it's only fair to make Roland his... an eternal warrior type guy, like in the Michael Moorcock books, to have this aspect, traversing worlds and sorting things out. Yeah, let's see how the movie turns out.
I was going
to
say, is he the doctor? It sounds like he's the doctor.
Which would be great too, if they make a franchise out of it and always cast another actor.
They could. I mean, if he can reboot himself into different timelines and
that would
stuff,
be great.
Why not? But I think it looks cool. I mean, I've always been intrigued by the Dark Tower series. I just never got around to reading the books, and also because I didn't quite understand how it all fit together, and it was such a sprawling thing that I really wanted something a lot more self-contained. I'm weird in that. When it comes to those large, super epic stories and worlds, I feel that the barrier to entry for me is just too high.
Yeah.
Like I was, a friend recommended a whole bunch of fantasy books to me, and I'm reading the synopsises on Amazon, like just to see if I want to get the book or not. And it's like, after the last war of the infidels, and it's not even the infidels, it's like after the last war of the Wakaloons against the blah, 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 blah dunes, the Combo Baba Empire was like everyone's. I'm like, I can't deal with all of these names. You know, like to me, it's just too much. I'm like, I don't want to deal with all of this, like this world. It might be interesting and stuff. And I'm sure when I read it or if I watch it on TV, it's going to be like super awesome and I'll get totally involved and into it. But I'm just like, I really don't want to get into this right now.
Yeah.
And so, like, a part of that was almost like with Wizard in Glass and the Dark Tower series for me was like, I'm like, oh, where do I start? This thing feels too big. I don't want to jump in, you know? But then once I get into it, like with Game of Thrones and stuff, where the barrier to entry is much lower, because it starts off like any other medieval fantasy.
Yeah, you just get an
any other medieval story. Yeah, there's not so much, like the learning curve is very, very, very slow ramp up. I'm much more comfortable.
Yeah.
But if you have to dive into a world that's completely brand new, I almost feel like, I don't want to have to deal with this right now.
it got that baggage, definitely. There was this whole thing, and it was destroyed by the Man in Black, and Hugo sets out for revenge. And the first book feels like it doesn't feel like the opening of a multi book arc. It just feels like a self contained story.
Yeah.
So it doesn't.
The first book is The Gunslinger.
Yeah, it's a make it or break it book. I had a hard time getting through it, and I know people who stopped reading it or simply didn't like the first book. But it gets, and that's, I mean, it's a stupid thing. It's the same as with TV. Oh, you have to watch the first season because the second season it gets
so much better.
Really good, yeah. But I don't want to spend like 300 or 400 pages with something I don't like or gets better in the next, I think, 400 or 600 pages that the second book had.
Yeah. I mean, it needs to be worth that investment of time, you know? Sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. Sometimes it starts off great, but then goes downhill like Lost, you know, which I'll never forgive. Not that I didn't watch the whole of the first season even, because I was like, I'm not gonna. Anyway, I'm looking forward to it though. I think the Dark Tower, it looks good, so I'm looking forward to see how they continue developing it, pulling it together. So cool. All right. So that pretty much. Okay. So wait, we got one more movie trailer that we have on the list here, which is. Okja?
Okja. Yeah.
Okay. So I saw this trailer.
Yeah.
So you put it on the list, though. So I want to hear your thoughts on it.
Have you seen Snowpiercer?
I have not seen Snowpiercer.
Okay, I thought we talked about Snowpiercer because this is the follow-up from Bong Joon-ho, Korean mm-hmm. director.
Yep.
And it's interesting that Netflix took it up. I mean, there's this whole controversy that it has problems in France at the Cannes Film Festival because the French are pissed off that it's not shown in theaters. Now it kills movies. But I felt it's such an odd thing to be taken up by something that has the range of Netflix.
Yeah.
Because of the... there is so
the
many...
subject matter?
Or? Yeah, there are so many stories interwoven because it's like this mix of... Was it My Big Friend Joe, the Disney movie with the gorilla and...
Mighty Joe Young.
Yeah, Mighty Joe. Then it's an ecological thriller. Ecological thing with how we treat nature and consume what nature gives us.
Consumerism culture.
Yeah, and the counterculture to that, the radical counterculture, and at the heart of it is a little girl and her animal friend, which gets abducted.
So the little girl looks so out of place because of the world that it's set in. Like, she's the most normal and the other two parts of the world, both... The consumerist part of the world kind of looks Hunger Games.
Yeah.
And then the counterculture kind of looks like they all look like supermodels have become Greenpeace activists.
Yeah.
You know, because they're all like, I don't know, it just feels like they're all just stepped off the runways at like New York Fashion Week. And now they're protesting this stuff.
I thought it kind of, it reflects, like we said before with something we talked about before, it reflects the current zeitgeist in a way, because the counterculture is presented by people. We have this vegan cook that's a real buff guy, and he's always on TV. And you can
what in Austria? This is
in Germany.
Okay,
I don't know his name, but
he's a buff vegan cook. I love it.
You know, he's one of those people where I ask myself, I wonder how it feels to get hit by him in the face, which is a strange thing, but those are actual thoughts I have when I watch bodybuilders or something. How would it feel to get punched by this guy or lady? I have the same thing with women. I like to get punched by women also.
Okay, then.
Yeah. And from this tangent... it just reflects.
Okay, I love how that you weren't even gonna qualify or clarify. You're just gonna leave it there and move on back to the movie. All right. Anyway, so
that's just me.
This is not just in terms of like my understanding as well. This is not based on any sort of comic or anything.
No.
So this is just coming out of the Netflix and the director's imagination. Did he write it as well, or just direct?
I think he wrote it as well. Snowpiercer was based on a manga, but I think this is an original thing.
Yeah, so I heard that it actually got booed in Cannes.
Yeah.
So the Cannes Film Festival is very much, you know, very much around like the art of cinema. So like you said, the French organizers of the Cannes Film Festival were kind of, they put a new rule in that the movie has to play in France like in the preceding year or something. In the theaters before they'll allow it in the film festival. And that was a way to try to cut Netflix out of the running. Because, I mean, from Netflix's point of view, they want to be a part of the film festival because that then helps them sell their product, right? It helps them get credibility and, you know, their movies, if they become a Cannes official selection or get a good review at Cannes, helps them in the long run.
That's just an artificial problem. Because if I don't want I wouldn't have invited or I wouldn't have allowed the movie to be screened at Cannes if I say, hey, we're a classic movie festival and we want to show movies that are actually in theaters at some point
TV. To me, it's a false fallacy. I mean, if you're a film... False fallacy. If you're a film festival, I don't even know what I'm saying anymore.
Amazing things.
If you're a film festival and if you're celebrating film, then it doesn't matter to me what medium the film's on, right? And
I know
that they're probably coming from a place of we want to be purist about the theater-going experience and watching film in theaters. But at the same time, you know, the technology's moved on, and the audiences are changing behaviors, and can, if it, you know, and maybe that, you know, in America for sure, because I think in America, the movie theater going experience is not very good.
Yeah.
People talk through movies, people use their mobile phones during movies, floors are sticky, there's like popcorn and like Coke spilt everywhere. Like it's pretty, it's not great sometimes. And then even worse, the theaters are trying to improve that somehow, but I don't think it's working. So yeah,
by putting playgrounds in the...
Well, playgrounds, they've got these dine-in theaters now, so you can actually get food and stuff served in. But I mean, I watched Arrival in a dine-in theater, right? So what that meant was you can order your food, and it's not great food. It's like fried crap.
Yeah.
And they bring it into you, but then they also don't dim the lights all the way down because then obviously you can't see what you're eating. So in the theater, the lights are higher than they should be. Everyone around you is getting served food and they're talking to their waiters all the time. So it's constantly like distracting you. So it's not any sort of enjoyment of the film itself. It's kind of just another way for them. I don't know. It's not an improvement in the experience to me. It detracts.
I totally can relate, because when I watched episode 7 for the second time, I had a guy with an infinite sack of popcorn sitting behind me.
Yeah. And it's just munch, munch, munch all the way through
the whole movie. Ugh.
Yeah. So that sucks. I mean, so that's why I think it's better. You can, you know, if you watch these movies at home, especially if you've got like a good TV and stuff, you have a much better experience compared to going to the cinema and having to deal with all these crazies. But I think maybe in Europe, and I haven't been to the cinema in Europe, but I think the audiences are a little bit not, don't talk as much is what I've heard. And potentially the cinemas are still kind of like the classic style. So maybe, you know, it hasn't quite hit Europe yet. And therefore France for the Cannes Film Festival, which is what they're trying to preserve.
Yeah, and there's another crowd. I can't talk to the Cineplex situation in Austria, because I only visit, or I used to frequent two cinemas, the only two English cinemas we have in Vienna, or the only two that I know of that we have in Vienna. And there the audience and the venues themselves are very kept in shape, you know, only buff guys and girls. The audience is kept in shape, and there's no food being served. You have the occasional talker in a movie, like me, when I really enjoy something.
And do you talk to the people around you, or do you just laugh? But, what do you mean?
I remember when I watched Iron Man 2 and Coulson mentioned that he had to go to New Mexico because something happened. I went like, yes, Thor's hammer!
you exclaimed that in the middle of the movie.
Yeah, really loud. And yeah, it was met with laughter, but also some glances, threatening some glances.
That's great. But I mean, as long as you're not having a conversation about... Like, I went to a movie... going to the movie in China was crazy because, I mean, people... I don't think they... I mean, it wasn't so much that they talked a lot, but I remember watching one movie where, because it was in English, like, the audio was English.
Yeah.
There was a lady who was translating all the English into Chinese to her father or someone the whole movie. So everything that was said, she'd be whispering to him in Chinese what they were saying on screen. And I'm like, oh my God, just go watch the Chinese version if you can't do it with the English. You know? But anyway, so I generally dislike... Yeah. I like going to the cinema because of the cinema. I just... Obviously, the size of the screen and the sound and everything is just so much cooler. But I would rather go on like week 3 or 4 when the movie's just about to finish and there's like not many people in the audience. So at least you know you're not going to be disturbed by some crazy person.
That's the problem here. Movies used to run longer, and we got matinees on the weekend and sometimes on weekdays. And those were my film dates when I had a morning off or had time on the weekend, and go to the cinema at 10 a.m. or 11 a.m. with like five other people. Those were the days, and movies don't even run for 3 weeks here anymore. Or at least I don't get the feeling that they do. I get the feeling that the movies are 2 weeks in on a screen that actually warrants buying a movie ticket. Because I've seen Rogue One on a on a smaller screen. And you know, I could have waited for the Blu-ray because the experience would have been the same.
Oh, you mean like in the cinema? You saw it in a smaller
on a smaller screen. Yeah,
right. Yeah, I mean, I think the release schedule is just so aggressive these days, especially in the summertime. I mean, like, movies are coming out weekly now. You know,
yeah, like, they have to push big the blockbuster movies to the big screens. Yeah,
so, yeah. Anyway, good problems to have, I guess, if you're going to have problems.
Yeah. And, I included Uchiha because I thought, you know, coming off of Snowpiercer, Bang Chung-ho wrote the story as well. It's an all-original story.
Oh, he did? Okay.
Yeah. I just thought it would be interesting to point it out to people because it just looks like Snowpiercer was already... It's such a crazy movie. It's one of those few movies where you actually feel threatened, although you are watching the proceedings on a screen and nothing is happening to you.
Yeah.
But it just feels so claustrophobic. You feel so involved into the whole thing, and seeing this skill brought to a story that is perhaps still a fantasy, but perhaps more relatable in the subject matter, will be interesting.
It's funny you say that because to me it feels a little bit hyper-real. Like there's a level of detachment. I mean, it's got a Hunger Games aesthetic around what that future, if it is set in the future, but what that world looks like, which gives it a sense of detachment, which is also why the young girl looks very normal and kind of really stands out in the movie. Like whenever she's on screen, she actually looks like out of place because the rest of the world is so crazy, or you know, it's got that hyper realness about it. It's not even hyper real; it's just hyper produced.
Yeah,
but it's interesting. I mean, the thing for me is, like you said, Snowpiercer was based on a comic story, right? Yeah. So it was an anime or a manga.
It was a manga.
Whereas this is his original story, so I wonder, like, compared to his directing prowess versus his writing prowess, how that will play out. Like sometimes you know, like we talked about with Seth MacFarlane and John Favreau for the Star Trek parody. I already forgot what it's called. The Orville. Yeah. You're better off having two people do it so they can moderate each other.
Yeah.
Whereas you give someone too much power and you end up with like the Seth MacFarlane movie about the Wild Wild West. Like I can't remember what that was called.
A 100 Ways to Die in the West.
Yeah, that one. It's like, what the hell is this? You know, like... Yeah, so I prefer when you've got like people playing off each other. Like that's why the best Transformers was the first one, because I think Spielberg had a lot more play.
Yeah,
but because it did so well, they just told Michael Bay, "Go and do your thing." And now he's like, "Now we get what
he's doing, you know? His thing." Yeah.
All right. Anyway, so yeah, I mean, it looks interesting. I don't, as cool as it looks, I don't know if I'm going to watch this one. Yeah. I don't like... I know where they're going with that little pig creature.
Yeah.
And I don't like to think about those things, so...
Yeah. I can totally relate to that because there's a certain scene in the trailer and I thought, oh my God.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, if we actually, as a society, as a civilization, knew where and how our food comes to us... we'd all stop eating, like.
Quite frankly, now that is not the podcast to talk about this. That's a Twitter conversation.
That's a Twitter conversation
waiting to happen. Yeah. But yeah.
If you want another book recommendation, The Omnivore's Dilemma. If you haven't read that one, but yeah, I can't remember who that's by. But anyway, that's worth checking out. All right, moving back into fantasy and fun territory is our... We better get to this Guardians of the Galaxy review.
Yeah.
So, how about we start off with that?
Let's do it.
So you watched it like 2 weeks ago? Oh, you watched it last week, right?
Watched it last week. Yeah, I have... I can't tell the last
few
weeks
from each
other. Yeah,
I don't even know what day it is anyway. Yeah, everything's blurring together. I live in America where time has an interesting property where every week feels like it's been a year when you pay attention to the news cycle. So,
but I just had to think about the opening to the latest Samurai Jack season where he says, "Time has no meaning." time has no effect on me. Like, yeah, with all the superhero movies, it's like a perpetual childhood.
Yeah.
Time has lost its effect on me.
I refuse to grow up. Yeah.
Yeah. Guardians, what did you think?
I liked it. I liked it better than the first one.
Really?
Okay. I mean, because that's because I didn't really enjoy the first one on first watching. It took me 3 or 4 watches to enjoy. I know. I mean,
Do I know you?
Yeah, we talked about this.
Really?
We talked about this. There were things about the first one that just bugged the hell out of me, which they addressed some of in this movie. One of which is going outside their spaceships without spacesuits.
I thought of you. That's the first thing that came up in the certain scene, yeah, where I thought, Niff's going to be so pissed at this.
Yeah. No, but this time around, they solved that. So they had this little like light shield thing that came up around their bodies whenever they went out. Because this time around, and I'm tapping on my desk like a politician, but this time around, they used the fact that people would die if they went out of their spaceships without spacesuits as a plot device to show how, you know, there were major deaths that happened this way in the second movie. In the first movie, he goes outside the spaceship multiple times and like with no detrimental effects. And I'm like, what the hell? You know, that's just stupid.
Perhaps he put the spacesuit on and off camera.
Well, no, to be fair, they could have, you know, because they had the Star-Lord mask and stuff, so they could have just said, oh no, you just couldn't see the light shield around him because it was invisible. You know, you could very well have played that line, but they didn't explain it in the first movie, and so my only assumption could be that he's outside of the bloody ship without any spacesuit. That's just stupid, yes, and I lost it. I mean, my dad walked out of Armageddon, the movie, because the pipe that they were using to do the fuel transfer between the space shuttle and space station Mir was the wrong type of pipe. And I laughed at him at the time, but like, that's pretty much why I didn't like Guardians of the Galaxy 1. Because I'm like,
that's badass, man. That's the wrong pipe. I want my money.
Yeah, but he's like, this is bullshit. I'm leaving.
That's amazing.
So, I mean, it's funny. After a while, you do turn into your parents.
No,
you know?
I'm totally okay with people because it pissed me off as well. It pissed me off in Star Wars Rebels when they're riding the space whales in their jumpsuits. Yeah,
yeah.
I totally get what you mean.
I did see that episode. Yes, but anyway, I mean, yeah, sometimes those small details, you know, are enough.
Yeah, I am willing
to suspend disbelief.
Yeah, but only to
a certain extent.
Yeah,
and Guardians of the Galaxy 1, you know, because the other thing, like, with Guardians of the Galaxy 1, like, even, like, Gamora, you know, when he's explaining Flashdance and he's saying, like, people had sticks up their asses and she asks, what, you know, who put the sticks up their asses? Like, that's a Drax question. That's not a Gamora question. Gamora does not understand metaphor. You know? And so just little things like that in the first movie that just kind of bugged me.
Yeah, but you know, in the first movie, there are only 3 characters. Star-Lord. No, 2. Star-Lord and Rocket Raccoon. If you boil it down, those are the only guys that
have any depth. Like,
yeah. And Groot to a certain degree, but...
Yeah, I felt the first one was fun. And after I watched it the first couple times, I was able to enjoy it for what it was. As in, it wasn't expecting it to be any sort of, like, even internally consistent sometimes.
Yeah.
I think I went into the second movie already expecting it's going to be at that level, and that's why I enjoyed it personally a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
Objectively, I think the first one might have been a better movie, because I think critically, and also if you look at audience reaction, people really enjoyed the first one. And everyone says the first one was better than the second one, but the second one's still pretty good. So that's general consensus. But for me, it was just the expectation was super high on the first one. Like, I've got to be fair. Like, the trailers and stuff were really great. I mean, like, it was on par with, like, how we thought about the Thor Ragnarok trailer.
Yeah.
So it's the one that set the standard for how cool those trailers could be, with the music choice, with the way they cut things together, just the level of craziness that they alluded to.
Yeah.
Whereas when we got the movie, despite all of those things, I was still like, what do you mean they're outside their spaceships? And he does it twice. Anyway, whereas this time around, I was like, okay, fine. I know they're going to do stupid things like that, so I'm just going to go with it. And I enjoyed it a lot more.
Yeah.
Saying that, though, I did feel that my favorite characters were not the actual Guardians themselves. Like, I think Kurt Russell's ego was really cool. And I quite liked Mantis. Like, I thought Mantis was cool. And Yondu came across, like, that was the best character in the whole movie to me. Like, Yondu had a specific, like, he had a full arc. Like, it was great to see, you know? And I think there was a lot of potential. And I think that's where James Gunn kind of fits in as a director. There's a lot of really heavy themes in the movie that they could have gone to explore. Like, all the stuff about family. You know, we talked about the family with Yondu and Chris Pratt with Yondu and Star-Lord, whereas Star-Lord versus his real father, you know, like just that family dynamic. There was the father-daughter's relationship and the sister's dynamic with Nebula and Gamora. There was the fact that Drax lost his entire family.
Yeah.
And then how they are all a family together now as the Guardians. There was a lot of stuff in there that they could have gone, like, you know, into a very, like, deep, dramatic kind of story into. But they kept it light. And even in moments where things get really tense, they flip back into, like, a joke.
Yeah.
The thing that I think it's a little heavy-handed, James Gunn is not able to do the flip between serious and humor as well as Joss Whedon does it. Like, Joss Whedon does it in a much more subtle and, I think, just a better way.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, James Gunn goes into, like, dramatic territory. It's super serious.
Yeah.
But then he effectively puts a dick joke in.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, to break the tension, yeah.
Whereas Joss Whedon, I think he does it in a much more subtle way, which is what, you know, that's what makes Joss Whedon.
Yeah.
But, you know, I liked it, so. I thought it looked fantastic.
It did.
Visually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That it did.
So I don't know how much of background noise, but like all my neighbors are like everyone's doing something. Like I'm pretty sure someone's vacuuming. There was a dog barking before. So it's all happening out here in Chicago.
It feels more silent to me than before now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know. I can hear stuff. I don't know. Maybe we've got the audio settings just right that it's not coming through. But anyway. But yeah, I mean, I wanted a little bit more. I wanted a little bit more in terms of, I think as a standalone movie, it was fine. As a movie that's a part of the larger Marvel franchise with Thanos just around the corner, I want to see a little bit more of the build-up towards the Infinity Stones and Infinity War.
Yeah.
Because to me, I think by the time we get there, it's going to feel like it's hopefully, I mean, you don't want it to feel like it's coming out of left field. I think Marvel and these movies should be foreshadowing a lot more of that stuff. But anyway, I mean, who knows how they're going to pull Infinity War off. So
yeah, and I feel like Guardians feel so detached from the Marvel universe, or from the rest of the cinematic universe, which in one way is, as a viewer, much more freeing because you don't have to know more than perhaps a few tidbits from the first movie. And the rest gets explained in this movie as well. But like you said, the first one, because it was, I guess, because it was such a fresh experience with something we thought we had settled into. And this one feels like the logical second arc in a comic book. It feels like this four-issue arc in between the arcs that the main team that's working on the book does, like with a story the writer put together for another artist to just bridge the gap that the other artist can get back into his rhythm.
I mean, it could be foreshadowing though. I mean, like you said, it's kind of like to bridge the gap. Because now that we know Star-Lord's origin, and I mean, does he still retain any of that power, or is he completely human now?
Yeah.
You know, because if he does, what does that mean for Infinity War and taking on Thanos and having the ability to control/handle an Infinity Stone? You know, that's quite an interesting path that they could go down.
Quite frankly, I thought Star-Lord had the was the most, the whole thing about him was the most uninteresting thing in the movie, for me at least. And I'm glad they didn't focus any more on his story arc than they did in the actual product, because even Drax's story with Mantis and showing us that the Drax has a really soft core.
Yeah.
He's more than just a stupid war machine.
Yeah.
And Gamora and Nebula's progress in their relationship and their realizations about the abusive relationship they had with Thanos was much better than Star-Lord and his dad. And I thought that the whole you're my son stuff, I didn't like it. I thought it, Chris Pratt is works best as the everyman, and it just didn't fit well when you know that he has this omnipotence in some way, and this great heritage. It takes away from the Star-Lord character.
Yeah, if he's a god,
yeah,
then you're like, you know, one of the fun things about Star-Lord is that he is so human, and you can see yourself in his shoes, you know, like he's your analog to be a guardian of the galaxy. Whereas if he's a god, then you're like, well, here's another, the one story.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Everyone can't be the one because there's only one.
Yeah, and that's sad.
Yeah.
I think.
But,
yeah.
Yeah, which is probably why they kind of gave it to him then took it away.
Yeah.
So, but it was cool. It was cool. I would definitely be like, it's the kind of movie that you can rewatch again and again. I think they had some really cool like action set pieces as well. And it fits very well in, even though it's, you know, it feels like a little bit, it's still out on its own as a part of the Marvel cosmic line. Because even like Thor and stuff is going to come together with Hulk, and they're going to start bridging the gap. Maybe the Nova's core will be in there and all that sort of stuff. This one still feels out on its own. Like it was almost too remote.
Yeah.
I would have liked it. At least you can see the trend where it's getting closer and closer to each other.
Yeah, they could have mentioned at least the Grandmaster or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, allude to the things that we're about to see in Thor Ragnarok. Yeah.
All right. So that's Guardians. I mean, do we want to give it a star rating?
Ooh, that's a hard... That would be a hard rating because it's a 2.5 to 3.5. I wouldn't go beyond 4 stars.
Out of 5?
Yeah. If we go by 5 stars.
Yeah, I'd give it a 3.
Yeah, it's solid.
I mean, I'm pretty much where you are. I think it's solid, but it wasn't really anything to write home about. I think, again, and it's because the expectations were quite high with it. And it's pretty much on par with what you'd expect from a Marvel movie. So that's not a bad rating specifically. But it didn't break any sort of ceiling, you know, in terms of like what it gave us. So I thought it was good. Solid, solid, solid Marvel night out.
A marvelous night out.
Yeah, marvelous night out. And then on the other side of things, we got some movie news, I guess, in terms of some announcements and stuff. So
yeah,
there's a new Hellboy movie coming.
Yes.
But it's not being done by Guillermo del Toro.
No, it's, I don't know who the director is. It's written by Mike Mignola, the creator of Hellboy.
Yeah.
And it'll feature the sheriff from Stranger Things. He's in talks to play Hellboy. And it should go more into, not in the fantasy aspect that Del Toro took, but rather in the blue collar nature that the Hellboy comics are in, that it's his job to fight monsters. He's like a plumber, so to say, or an electrician.
He's a monster fighting tradesman. That's my trade. Yeah.
And I think it'll be interesting to see that take on the thing.
Yeah, and I think casting wise, that's a good choice as well, because that, you know, I think I can't remember the actor's name, but he comes across as a very relatable, likable kind of everyman, or at least someone that you can relate to. Somebody that you can see in your community, you know? So,
I mean, I dig the two Hellboy movies that we got. I still like to watch them. And I know
they were good, but they were very Guillermo del Toro in terms of look and feel, and I mean, color palette, creature design.
Yeah.
It's very much a Guillermo del Toro world that was created in those movies.
But they brought, we have to be, as Hellboy comic book readers, we have to be thankful for him doing those movies, because I know, for example, they brought a lot of people to the comic books.
Yeah.
A lot of people discovered that I know discovered the comic books through the movies. So thank you, Guillermo.
Thanks, Guillermo. As always.
As always.
Yeah, but no, that was a great run. I mean, those movies were great. I don't think they were they opened a lot of doors, and they sort of helped mainstreamify a lot of,
yeah.
I mean, not just Hellboy, but I think a lot of comics and sort of what comics movies could be in general as well. So, and well, I mean, they were cool. They were fun to watch. But it'll be good to see another interpretation. Like, I think it's enough time has gone past now. That we're, and especially, and the world has changed when it comes to comic book movies, that not so much a reboot, but another interpretation of that material will be cool to see.
Yeah.
And speaking of reinterpretations of the material, so Tom Hardy apparently has just been cast to play Venom. And I can see you shaking your head. So what do you think of that?
I don't know. We haven't even seen the I think this is
Homecoming.
They should have waited until Homecoming came out with that announcement, because nobody knows how Homecoming will turn out. Will the box office revenue justify a Venom movie? A character that isn't that beloved by cinematic or comic book movie fans?
So Venom is a pretty popular character in the comics, but the only time we've seen Venom being played on the screen is by Topher Grace in the amazing, was it like Spider-Man 2 or 3 or something?
3, yeah.
3. And it wasn't done very well. Like, overall, I think it wasn't put together very well.
No.
Right? I want to see, you know, going back to my love of dark and gritty movies, Venom needs to be done as a horror movie. Venom is effectively your H.R. Geiger analog in the Spider-Man universe of the teeth in the shadows with the saliva dripping down. So it needs to be done like in that kind of style. It needs, you know, it can't be too bright and poppy. So it'll be cool. That's the kind of like version of Venom I want to see. And I think Tom Hardy would be a cool choice for that.
Well, if they go for the more recent iteration of Venom, where he's bonded to Flash Thompson, and even becomes a Guardian of the Galaxy at some point, and traverses space, and the Venom suit looks more like a piece of armor. I think that would make a great story too, and it would be throwing a curveball, to go into another direction. I don't know what they're gonna do with it or how Venom will factor. If we see Venom in Homecoming, or
well, the Super Sleet. From what I understand of how Sony's going to, because Sony owns Venom, and Sony's co-producing Spider-Man with Marvel. So from what I understand, Marvel and Spider-Man will exist in one universe, and the rest of these characters are going to exist in a different universe.
Okay.
So it could very well be that the Venom universe, if you're going to call it that, will include a Spider-Man, but that could be potentially like even Miles Morales. I don't even know. So that would be cool. If Sony had a Miles Morales universe with Venom and all these other characters, whereas Tom Holland's Spider-Man exists in the Marvel universe. So you'd have these two. I mean, it would be confusing as hell, potentially, depending on how they do it. But yeah, it'll be cool to see. Have you watched the movie Life?
Ah, no. But there's
Ryan Reynolds and Jake Gyllenhaal.
No, but I know some people speculated that it could have worked as a prequel to a Venom movie.
All they needed to do was like change the last 2 minutes of the movie and they could have made it a Venom prequel, which would have been awesome. So to your point, I mean, you mentioned before about how when Flash Thompson gets the Venom and he becomes a space armored, you know, guy and goes out and stuff. For me, I still like not so much the Eddie Brock Venom.
Mm-hmm.
But I like the Venom, which is the bio-organic symbiotic suit that is kind of like a pile of, it's like a flubber style, sickly oil slick of a creature that kind of envelopes and takes over someone and then becomes Venom. Like, I think that is just, that's horrific in the way they could play that out on screen. And I'd really dig that. Because what I would love to see, I mean, I want to see like Carnage. I want to see Venom versus Carnage. Like, that would be so cool. I mean, it would be completely crazy because you'd have these two symbiotic monsters fighting each other, but you'd do it in like a, you do it in a Pacific Rim style thing where Carnage is just, you know, you discount that there's somebody actually inside it because it's just a psychopathic monster. And Venom, as your anti-hero character, is the only thing that can fight back against it.
Yeah.
You know? And then you merge that story with Venom taking on Carnage by himself with help from the military and the police, and it becomes like a Godzilla style where they're not super giant monsters, they're not kaiju, but they're street level monsters fighting with all this collateral damage happening against them, but the military work out that one of them is good and is trying to help and the other one needs to be taken down. I think that would be cool. I mean, so you would transition from monster movie, maybe in the first act, to the second act would be Eddie Brock or whoever it is inside the Venom symbiote coming to terms with what he is.
Yeah.
And then Carnage shows up and starts wreaking havoc. And then Venom is being hunted as well as Carnage is being hunted. And then when they finally go against each other in the third act, the police or the military or whoever it is work out that they need to help Venom against Carnage and then bring out like flamethrowers and their sound super big speakers to use like sonic attacks or whatever else they want to do, right? But I think that would be really cool. So then you wouldn't even have to bring in Spider-Man, you know? It becomes a Venom-centered story and starts off like The Ring, like you make it super scary.
That would be amazing because Maximum Carnage to this day still haunts me. You know, the level of casualties in that comic and basically New York running amok, the whole city running amok.
Yeah, the body count like just escalates. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the so Maximum Carnage is the comic that got me into comics. It's the first comic crossover story I ever read.
Oh, really? Nice.
And I was like, I was in probably like the eighth grade.
Yeah.
And my friend lent it to me at a swimming carnival because we were so into sports that we were paying a lot of attention. And so I read comics while we were at the swimming carnival. And I started off reading Maximum Carnage, and I think I got through the whole thing in like a day because he had all the issues. So I was like, this is so cool.
Yeah.
I don't even know why we had so many comics at the swimming carnival. But anyway.
Because it was such a great occasion.
I was clearly a jock in school.
With all your comics.
Yeah. Oh dear. All right, cool. No, that would be, I mean, I think Tom Hardy is an interesting choice. I mean, he really commits to the character, but sometimes that kind of backfires because like in Mad Max, you know, he's always wearing a mask. He's always covering up his face and you can't hear what the hell he's saying. So hopefully they find a way to do this as Venom where, you know, it doesn't detract from him actually being able to give out a good performance. And I'm sure, you know, it's a great case to use motion capture as Venom. Like you wouldn't actually, you know, I don't want them to cover Tom Hardy's face and cover his mouth so he can't talk properly like he was with Bane, where you had this kind of like dismembered voice. But it'll be cool if they could do it as motion capture and then imagine like a xenomorph type, because that's effectively like Venom was modeled on the xenomorph stylings, right?
And then map his face onto Venom's face.
Well, not just the face, though. Like, he's big enough where you can conceivably say Tom Hardy's got the physical presence to be this big, monstrous monster. Yeah. But at the same time, when the Venom suit comes on, it makes him even bigger and actually changes his physiology. Like, it's and that's what's so weird about it, is because the Venom suit's, the symbiote's over, it's enveloping the human. But it grotesquely changes the form of the human as well. Like it's kind of like a werewolf style transformation where they become beastly. I mean, Venom, the way they show it in the comics, just gets a lot more muscles. But it'll be cool if they can bring that concept of making him like physiologically change as well. Because you almost want to, like, because it's just a person inside a suit, you almost imagine the bones and stuff breaking underneath, like the suit's forcing this contorted figure now.
Yeah,
it's so cool.
If they do that, that would be great because it would give Tom Hardy, as you said, the chance to use his whole being in the role, to really approach this role from a more practical angle.
Like his it'll be cool because it's not just going to be him in a suit and having that suit or that mask kind of, you know, I won't use the term limit, but constrain him with what he can do as an actor. So it'll be cool if it's motion capture, because then he could just, you know, he could do whatever he needs to do without that constraint. Off, and it'll be digitally rendered on screen. Like, that would be so cool. So, I mean, exciting. We just have to see how they, pull it off.
What actually happens.
So that's Venom. So I don't know. I don't even know when that's coming out. Might be like 2020 for all we know. I can't remember if they announced a date. They may have said 2018. I can't remember. But I guess we'll hear more as they actually progress towards
I think we can't help ourselves then.
Cool. And then finally, Shin Godzilla.
Yeah, finally seen it.
Seen it. I have not seen this. So it's a non-spoiler review that you're about to give us.
Okay. It's the Godzilla movie that we deserved, but Gareth Edwards wasn't able to give us.
Right.
Because it really is an update to the... to the classic Godzilla movie, in that it's not just two monsters fighting in a city, but rather a part of nature that we contorted to become a certain thing coming back to haunt us. And there is this blog out there, My Kaiju. I forgot. Yeah. The guy who's running the blog does translate a lot of the back matter, because there are some really interesting aspects in the story or the creation of Godzilla that doesn't get explored properly, that does get mentioned but not explored properly in the movie. And it's at the end, it's a tale about humanity trying to live in harmony with nature, but because of the nature of humanity, can't do it.
Right.
It's a really strange tales about things coming back, things that you are not responsible for directly.
But it's like your like kind of inherited sin.
Yeah, and in this case, nuclear energy. And I'm blanking on the words. The commodity that nuclear energy is comes back to bite humanity in the ass in the form of Godzilla.
Right.
And it's the
cost of what nuclear energy has been, but it doesn't get paid by effectively the generation that bought it. It gets paid by the future generation, right? Which is
some people from the generation that is responsible for this thing to happen, how they react. I mean, it's clearly a sort of retelling of the Fukushima event, but it also focuses on the political gears moving so slowly, and all the bureaucratic process that is involved in handling such a thing, the shackles that are that we put upon ourselves and that prevent us from doing anything. I mean, those shackles make sense to some degree.
I guess when you're in the situation, the shackles make sense, but I guess the whole point of a movie like Godzilla and sort of going into those sorts of themes is about exploring and talking about how that's what happens.
Yeah.
And this is the cost, and this is the effect of doing things in this way. And the movie actually goes into that investigation, like it actually comments on that.
It does comment on it to a certain degree through the characters, but not in a way that you feel like it is preaching down on us. But it's just accepting things as they are, and characters in the movie are actually working against it or trying to test the limits of their shackles,
right?
How far they can bring them. Yeah, it's such an odd thing to do when you expect a modern Godzilla movie that's being made by the director of Neon Genesis Evangelion, and I'm blanking on his whole name, Hideaki Anno, and the guy who worked on, I think it was the effect guy that worked on Attack on Titan on the live action thing. And you think that there'll be, you know, Roland will show up or some other character will show up, and there will be this fight in the city but it doesn't happen. It's really just a, even how Godzilla is portrayed, because in his whole agenda, there is no agenda in this movie. He just comes to shore and starts wreaking havoc. And he's not even wreaking havoc. He just hits land.
He's just being him.
Yeah, he's taking a walk and suddenly he gets bombed. And of course he reacts because he's getting threatened. And as soon as the threat becomes real, he's starting to react to it. And the way he is reacting to it is so horrendous. It's just, it's this one big action scene. It's the biggest action scene in the movie, but it's, he sets Tokyo on fire.
He sets Tokyo on fire.
But in a way, with his atomic breath that becomes an atomic laser. You know, it's just spewing out this combustible fluid. Everything goes up in flames, and then suddenly it's like, if you're welding, you have to add sauerstoff. You have to add air to focus the flame, and he just focuses his flame into this super dense laser that goes on for miles and cuts through the city. And then you have the shot of Tokyo burning and him just standing there. And he's not even looking angry. He's just this canvas that you can project anything. He could be angry. He could be happy with the work done. It's a great movie. I like it more than I have anticipated it, especially after the reviews, because they were all over the place here. That there were the meh, and it's not that great, and it's the best movie I ever made. You had everything, the whole spectrum, and I see every point of every aspect of the spectrum, but yeah. It was a great movie. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it a lot.
So is that out on Blu-ray now, or is it on streaming? Or
I got the Japanese Blu-ray and a fan sub.
Oh, really?
So right. I bought the Blu-ray from Japan, ripped it, and put the subtitles on, and burned it on a Blu-ray, and then watched it.
Nice. So you need to get the Japanese version then.
Yeah, but it comes an English version comes out in August on Blu-ray, and there's even a German version for all our European listeners, the two we've got. comes out a German version in October on Blu-ray and DVD. But what's sad is the Japanese, I got the free DVD set or four DVDs, Blu-rays, and there is, I think it's two Blu-rays with extras. And there's some neat stuff.
Oh, okay.
I have no idea what they're talking about.
Right, because obviously that's not subtitled.
Yeah, but you get a lot of the animation process and how they redesigned Godzilla.
Oh, nice.
The design of the monster is the fact that he seems to have no skin, and these dead eyes emphasizes the point of, you know, I'm just a canvas. I'm just here, and I'm just walking through Tokyo like you are walking through the forest and squashing books.
Yeah.
I'm just walking through Tokyo, squashing you. I'm not even aware of you until you start dropping bombs on me.
It's like you mean nothing to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And not in a bad way. It's just I don't register you. Because
it's like, exactly.
I'm Godzilla. Yeah.
Cool. I mean, it sounds like you really enjoyed it. Yeah, so obviously now we need to wait till August to get a English version of this come out. So Shin Godzilla. So watch out. Watch out for that in August this year. So it's only a couple months away. Wow, it's like scary. It's only a couple months away.
Oh, yeah. But perhaps...
What happened to 2017?
I don't know. I just realized that it's the 20th of May already.
Yeah.
Like May started last week.
Crazy stuff. All right. Well, that pretty much takes us through our agenda. We had a marathon session today.
Yeah.
I think we've been like on for like 4 hours, and I think we've got 3.5 hours of material right now.
Yes.
So we'll see how we go in cutting this down.
We just released another two episodes again.
Yeah, it'll be another two-parter. It'll be part one, and then commercial break, and then part two. All right. Awesome. Well, that was fun catching up. And I guess, obviously, the summer is only starting. So we got Aliens. We got, not Aliens, but Alien Covenant. We got Thor Ragnarok. We got a whole bunch of stuff coming for the rest of this year. So stay tuned. And we'll be here.
Yeah, you'll hear from us, guys. Thanks for listening.
I was like, when I started this, when we started this, it was daytime in Austria, and Martin now is sitting in the dark and kind of looks like the emperor, just staring at me from
the
shadows.
Oh my god!
You effectively look like just this hovering, floating face in the shadows. It's.
I didn't realize it got that dark.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. All right, so it's been a fun time, and I guess we'll catch up next time.
See you then, guys.
See you later.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Asteroids in Exile. You can find everything we talked about in the show notes. You can get into contact with us via email at asteroidsinexile@gmail.com, via Twitter under the handle asteroidsin, or Instagram at asteroidsinexile. You can find our blog and further episodes of this podcast at asteroidsinexile.com. Our intro and outro music comes courtesy of the band Safe States, which you can find at safestates.bandcamp.com. Thank you so much for your time. If you like this podcast, consider leaving a rating and or review at iTunes or the podcatcher of your choice. Again, thanks for listening, and you'll hear from us.
Should we go into, just cut that bit back into the trailer review section? Oh, we'll just talk about it.
Again. Can we give it a quick whiz?
Quick whiz?
A quick whiz, okay. Yeah. Classy audio.
Maybe,
and we
maybe
have an
that
outtake.
Should, maybe that should be the name of our informal sessions.
Don't drown. I'm taking a quick whiz. Yes, Daddy.
Don't drown. That... Out of context, not knowing the backstory about the pool story, that's a very someone hearing that for the first time be like, "Don't drown! I'm taking a whiz." What?
Huh?
How much are you gonna whiz? Oh my god!
In public? A whiz in public?
Yeah.
Where are you whizzing? What is this?
Oh man!
Just got it. Fuck!
I know. I saw it. I saw a dawn on your face just as you got it. That's... Did I tell you about my mutant power? They call me the hydrant.
The hydrant. I make people drown with my whiz.
Yeah. Hey, I mean, if skin from Generation X can have excessive skin, why not?
Why not? Excessive pee.
Excessive pee.
Extra pee.
I have bladder control issues. imagine that's what it's going to be like, right? It's going to be like when Jean Grey is like freaking out because she can't control her phoenix power and there's just waves of psionic energy going out of her.
But everybody just loses everything he carried with him, or in him, rather.
Yeah. That's what Hydron's power is going to be.
But he sounds like he would have appeared in Grant Morrison's X-Men run. You know?
Yeah.
We had Beast Boy and...
Yeah. It's just the kind of commentary on human, on mutant, mutant abilities, you know.
They're not always glorious
powers. Exactly. Not everyone gets glorious wings or, you know, optic blasts. Some people just get urination problems.
I save you, Wolverine. Oh my god, I'm drowning. Oh.
You just took it to the next level with your... Again, I saw that dawn on your face before you... anyway.
From whizzing to colon.
Well, we wouldn't say colon. We would have said cologne. Colon is, like, not the nicest...
Colon is just a whiz away. And, oh, God, yeah.
Like, I'm still pretty. I take a long time to wake up in the mornings. Like, it's your afternoon. You're like ready to go. You're like, oh, like,
you
I'm
know,
still like.
I already replaced bathtubs today. And,
I know.
You know, like a lord. Imperial like, swagger, man.